All right, welcome, Joel Goldberg.
Great to be here.
Thanks for being on the Technocrat Live.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So they just had to shut us up because we wouldn't stop talking so that we could start the show.
I've got nothing else to say.
All right, you got nothing else to say? You just clammed up right now. Like, oh, no, people are watching. I totally inflated those numbers, so don't worry. There's only a handful of people watching. So we were just talking about... So, I'm going to start with a conspiracy theory.
Okay.
So, we were just, because I think it's kind of interesting. So, I have an account on Gab, and I have an account on Twitter, and I've had an account on Twitter since 2009, and I just left it, like, completely alone for years and years and years. And then about a year after I started my Twitter account, Gab started, and I actually started putting content out there. And I swear Twitter was shadow banning me because I would say the same things on both platforms. By the way, just for the record, there are absolutely Nazis on Gab, and Gab is absolutely not filled with Nazis. There's a handful of really vocal people for every fringe.
Yes.
And those guys, and they don't stop them because that's their whole shtick, is it's a free speech platform. And there's people advocating for, I don't know, I want to like make a list because I'll probably get on a list. Like if there's no list, I'm not already on. So when that shooting happened in Philly, there was just, people were just really mad at Gab, and people were attacking it, and it was down, and like people were banning it, and the press was maligning it. And so I just put a thing up on Twitter. I compared my followers, which were huge on Gab, to my followers on Twitter, put it in an image, and then I put it up on Twitter. And then when that happened for the first time, for a couple of years, I actually started accumulating followers on Twitter again.
Oh, wow.
And I swear I was shadow banned. You know, like everyone's like, oh, shadow banning. And I'm like, yeah, I think it's real. And I think it was on me. And I think when I, you know, when they said, and probably because somebody looked at it, this photo, and went, oh, what's going on here? This guy's got reasonable posts. He's not a crazy.
Right, right.
And maybe I had just had, some bot had just picked me up because I used words that were, I mean, I talk about psychopaths a lot.
Right, right.
So who's going to, you know, if someone's going on online and talking about psychopaths, they might be one, right? So I could kind of see how they would, you know. Anyway, so I just thought that was kind of an interesting example of how an algorithm can totally just grab you and say, yeah, you're supposed to be in this category. And I can't even imagine what's going to happen with this show. This is like an experiment because I don't know where we're going.
I think it's great. You know, it's a great opportunity. I told you before the show, reminds me of Between Two Ferns, the technology.
That's awesome. That is like the best compliment. I love Zach, and that's great. I've only watched a few of them, but they're pretty ridiculous. Nothing is off the table. We can talk about anything, as long as it's legal enough that they won't send the police. But even then, that would be a pretty interesting show. So
yeah.
Probably okay. It would be good. It would be good streaming.
I've been thrown out of better places.
Nice. So what's going on in your life? What's happening?
Life is so busy.
Well, you've been up since 5 in the morning, you told me.
Yes, I've been up since 5 in the morning. My daughter went on a school trip to Boston, so I had to drop her off at the bus, mm-hmm. which was she's very excited about it. And the company I work for is thankfully doing very well. We do cybersecurity and cloud services and stuff like that.
Really?
But so the business has been really good, but it keeps you busy.
What's the name of the company, if you want to say?
CCSI.
CCSI.
Yep.
And what are they doing? Is it like services that you're adding? Is it value added Well, you tell me. I assume it's some kind of service model.
Yeah,
right?
Yep. They provide services. They'll do, they have a network operations center. They have a security operations center, 24/7. They'll also come in and help you fix your network. They'll do assessments.
Oh, so you guys have hired guns.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're not building an infrastructure that you're sharing with people. Going in and solving the problem.
Exactly. Yeah.
Nice.
Exactly.
Yeah. I knew you were sharp. I was like, I'm not sure exactly what he does. Now I know. So you're just facing random problems.
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
From your perspective, at least.
Well, yeah. And it's
maybe they did it themselves in a larger sense.
It's actually the first time I've been in a company like this. Most of my career, I've been an operations guy for a single company. So, getting calls at 2 o'clock in the morning and stuff. And so now it's different.
Right. Now you told me.
I have no ownership of it.
You made that change from an operations guy to being the engineer type.
Yep.
But I didn't realize it was also the consultant's kind of, Winston Wolfe crack ops kind of.
Yep.
You know what I mean by Winston Wolfe, right?
Yep.
From Pulp Fiction.
Yeah. And it's kind of cool because it's I don't get the calls at 2 o'clock in the morning anymore.
Right.
So
well,
you might
get calls at 2 in the morning, right?
No, we have guys that take care of that. So I'm actually the guy
paper rustlers.
Yes, I design and
Hold on, sir.
Yep.
Okay.
I design and I build the cloud solutions, and then when I'm done, I go, you manage it.
That's good.
And somebody
you
else
still own your stuff, though, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And if they did call me at 2 o'clock in the morning, I would get up. But for the first couple of months, I'd wake up in the middle of the night and be like, "Is my phone still working? It's not ringing."
Nice.
Takes a while to kind of change the mode.
Yeah. I mean, I've been working on it for 2 years, so I was working in IT as an admin and then an engineer. And I'm, just in case, just for the record, in case one of my previous employers says, "Oh, well, we never technically entitled you to be engineer." First of all, I've been a manager of a group of IT guys before, so I'm telling you, as the guy, if I was manager of myself, I definitely would have named myself engineer, because I had built our entire infrastructure out of 300 plus scripts, and that was what they wanted. And I didn't do that on my own accord. I did that, and they were all idempotent, and it was rock solid. It was very rare. Once a week, maybe somebody had to ask me a question about it.
Right.
Not
right.
even fix a bug, just ask me a question about it. Anyway, so I was an engineer, and I moved up from being just a tech through ups and downs and ins and outs, but. It's rough.
It is.
Getting the call in the middle of the night and sometimes it's not your fault. It's what it is? The thing that bothers me about it is it's unfair. Because sometimes it's not a decision you made. Sometimes
right.
it is. At least if it is, it's fair.
Right.
You're getting punished. There's a feedback loop and you're getting punished for your own decision making.
I didn't even fully, when I got into this industry, I mean, it was a long time ago. I'm afraid to say how long, but when I was in college.
I'm taking the dates off my resume. My wife did it, and I'm like, "This is great. Why didn't I think of this sooner?"
Right. Yep. Because
that way, goodbye ageism.
Yep.
You get called for the interview, and then they interview you, and they're like, "Well, that guy's kind of old."
And
right.
Well,
and then but then they hear you, and they're like, "All right, maybe."
A lot of interviews now are done remotely anyway. So
really,
a lot of interviews I've done have either
another
phone
thing
or
the
Skype.
Show has on the tech world.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
You can see me. You can see how old I am.
Well, only so there's going to be one of the things I wanted to say is there's going to be audio of the show too. So I actually put I have audio files up of all the shows now. So if you don't want to watch it live and you don't want to sit there glued to YouTube, you can actually download an MP3 and stick it on your doodad and listen to it. And that was always the intention because. Now I will tell you there's a touch app, a few touch apps on the App Store that you can get either for Apple or for Android that you can just that will hold your screen open and keep it live, and that's how I prefer to watch.
Okay.
I like to watch videos.
Yes.
And then what I do is I lock the screen on so it thinks I'm staring at my phone,
right.
I'm on a train or something, and then I put it in my pocket and I work, and then when something interesting is happening, people are waving their arms, and you know, someone's climbed under the table and there's a monkey for some reason, not promising monkeys, but monkeys would be funny.
You promised me a monkey.
Reboot monkeys. I've been a reboot monkey. Poof, monkeys.
Yep.
So, see, you ask and you shall receive. You didn't even ask for monkeys, and I knew you wanted them, and I produced them. So, I'll just unlock my screen, watch whatever's happening, lock it again, put it away.
Oh, that's cool.
So, I don't know. I like it. So, and
that's
I like
awesome.
It because you can't fake it.
Right.
You can't
right.
fake this.
Right, exactly.
You know.
Exactly. People will get to see me just as I am.
Yes.
Sorry.
You're pretty... And by the way, I just want to say thank you so much for stepping up to be secretary of our user group. I really appreciate that.
And I'm really excited. It's a great... Long Island especially needs more stuff like this.
There's tons of techs here.
Actually,
we have so little... The group is big, but there's so little penetration compared to the entirety of all the techs.
Yes.
You know, so, look up Lilug if you're interested in the Long Island area. And if you're not, look up your local user group. And if you're not interested in Linux... Start a user group because user groups are awesome. This is how I met all these people. I know so many geeks I could do this until the sun burned out. So I'm sorry, you were talking about getting beeped in the middle of the night.
Oh, so when I started my career, I never thought that I would be, an IT person. I went to college for computer science. I'm going to be a programmer, and I was fortunate. I did an internship at Cheyenne Software, which turned into a gigantic company.
Yeah, they're huge.
I was employee number 18.
What?
Yep.
That's crazy.
And I was an intern. They had no money.
Oh, you're hardcore, man.
They had no money, and it was the best job ever. So I was a programmer. I started out, and I started the same day as the VP of engineering, who ended up becoming the CEO. And one day he comes over, and he's like, Joe, you are not a good programmer. My whole life flashes before my eyes. The developers that were there, I really wasn't a good programmer. They could write boatloads of code and just bang it out. I can write code.
That guy was
anything.
A bad manager. I just want to say that.
Well, no, he was a great mentor because he recognized that I would not have been successful there. But he also knew that I had because I was also fixing computers in the building because I was the only one who knew anything about the inside of a computer.
Right.
He's like, listen, at the time we were making software that did litigation management. It was really boring stuff. And
that's exciting.
Yeah. So he had come up with the idea for ArcServe, which was the premier network-centric backup product. It was his idea.
Why don't you do a 20-second on what ArcServe is, so people.
Oh, ArcServe is centralized network or server-based backup. It was the first server-based backup.
Right.
Because what used to happen is you'd put a tape drive on every server and back it up.
Right.
ArcServe said buy one tape drive and back up all your servers.
I saw that stuff still in use in 2004. So.
Yeah. Yep. And now it's a separate company. The CA spun them out again.
Right.
And
oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're
cool.
Separate. And actually, it's kind of funny. A lot of the old Cheyenne people are going back there. It's actually just a really fantastic place.
Oh, okay, cool.
So I keep in touch with them.
So.
But so
I'm sorry to have been mean to your manager.
I thought
he was just being the way you made it sound. It almost sounded like it was just like no constructive criticism. Like you suck.
Well, yeah.
I lit your car on fire. Your stuff's in a box in a bush in the parking lot.
No.
You know.
He didn't just say, "Oh, you suck." He said, "You suck, but I got an idea for you."
Okay, good.
So
that's the right way to do it.
And he handed me a box of NetWare. It was NetWare 3.1.1. He plops it on the table. And he goes, "Learn this," and that was how I got into servers and networking and stuff like that.
Right.
Because he needed to build all this NetWare networking stuff to be able to make ArcServe. So I became their IT guy, and so started my
was
long
it Unix
career.
That they were focused on Windows or
no? It was all NetWare. It was all Novell to begin with, and then they went to a little bit of Windows.
And Windows is where I bumped into it.
And
in that weird, awkward stage where it had used to be NT, but now it's in an Active Directory,
but it's
still single server-centric model instead of having everything served to you by Active Directory.
When Windows NT came out, I was the guy they hired to do the Windows development. I was like, this Windows stuff for a server is never going to take off.
Right.
I was a little wrong. But
no, well, you know what? I mean, it was weird. It was there was a lot of problems with Windows. I'm sure the Windows people are cringing right now.
Right.
Windows NT was bad. I'm sorry.
It was. It really was.
I mean, it had some good performance things. It did have symmetric multiprocessing. There were features and types of services you could run on them that work well. But I mean, I saw whole labs of NT machines just crash constantly for no good reason.
Yep.
Other than bizarre, you know, I think Microsoft just. I don't know. I'm getting off on a tangent. No, you know what? I'll go there.
Let's go down this rabbit hole.
This is what I think happened with Windows and Linux. I think that Microsoft didn't realize they were about to hit this gigantic hockey stick of hardware peripheral variety.
Right.
And they just didn't have the management mechanism. They couldn't manage when they went from 1,000 devices to support to 10,000 or 10,000 to 100,000 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So at some point in that curve, it just went asymptotic and they couldn't keep up with it anymore. And that's when people started looking at Linux. So Linux was already going when there wasn't really a need for it.
Right.
Other than Linux didn't want to pay for, you know,
right.
It didn't want to pay for Solaris. And then that happened. And then late 90s, you know, all the Linux guys are like, this is the way it is. This is dependable. It's reliable. When I set something up, it keeps working. And all the Windows guys are like, you are silly people. We will not take you seriously.
And now, look, you can run Bash in Windows.
Nice. Without installing anything.
Right, without installing anything.
Yeah, yeah. Bash is born again shell, in case you... and no, it's not a religious thing. It was the born shell, and then they did... Everyone's
yes.
That clever. Although, it kind of... You could have just left that ambiguous. It's still funny.
Yep.
So, anyway, I just wanted to bring people in the fold if they're not hardcore geeks, because I'm going for a mixed audience, right?
So yeah, you could really go down the rabbit hole
right,
with the
right. This is meet the technocrat as much as it is beat people into the dirt with an iron bat.
Right.
By the technocrat, you know, so.
Technology should be the great equalizer.
And it's not.
It's not. But it's
really bad.
Be. It could be. If people addressed the issues and the complexities and stuff and went out and educated, you know, the masses.
Right.
It could really be a great equalizer. Because if you're a 10-year-old kid in, you know, somewhere in the middle of Africa and you've got some kind of internet access, you could be learning the same stuff as a kid at Harvard.
I left the Raspberry Pi home, so this is something we've been talking about on a few of the shows. You know, it's so cheap now.
Yeah.
You know, there is no barrier to entry, and actually that's really telling. I mean, you can borrow or beg for the money to get at least into computers. You
yes.
may not be able to build a cluster of Raspberry Pis, but you can get one,
yep.
and get it working, and get a, you know, an 8-gig SD card and stick it in there, and you know, bring it to an internet cafe and attach to their Wi-Fi and use it as a computer
yep.
for almost nothing.
For
almost
yep.
a homeless person without all their screws in their head could go and do that.
Right.
You know, and it's not just, but it sounds like it's kind of like almost sounds like a little condescending in this country, but in other countries where they're really poor, that's important.
Yeah.
But the thing that's really interesting is now that that's happened and everybody has access to that level of technology, you know, maybe they don't have the time to play with it, but assuming they can find the time to play with it, why isn't this sudden flood of geeks? It's still a scarcity problem.
Yes. Yeah.
What is going on there?
When I was in college, people used to say it was because becoming an engineer or technology person was hard, you know?
Right.
But there's a lot of paths to getting into technology. Nowadays, there's a lot of developers and people in IT that didn't go to college.
Right.
You know, you go get your A-plus certification or you learn to develop from like a Code Academy or something like that.
So I have actually a whole sheet of this monstrosity that's growing into my of my brainstorm and other people's brainstorm. Like Lee added 10 things, Rich added a few things, Isaac added a few things, but there's a whole section here just for terminology, because you know we need new words to talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
So one of the things I had come up with, actually I came up with on my CivGene site, was the complexity horizon, where there's this idea that literally technologies starts evolving faster than then you can make language for it.
Yes.
And if that's happening, then you know the schools can't teach it, can't make a curriculum.
Oh, absolutely.
You can't even describe the language. You know, the first thing they'll do when they go to sit down and make a curriculum is try to, you know, give everything a word so that you can talk about it.
Right.
And they can't even keep up. They can't even make words fast enough.
And employers don't make it any better. I mean, when I was in college, it was kind of like I always viewed it, you know, why am I taking calculus and physics and all this stuff? But it taught you to take a really big problem, break it into little pieces, solve each piece, and then assemble an answer,
right,
which is really with troubleshooting.
And take responsibility for a little small piece and make sure to send the rest off to a committee so that when it doesn't get done, you can say, oh, it's their fault.
Right. They're the blocker.
Oh, no, sorry. That's the old way of doing things.
But nowadays, I mean, you look at some of these job recs, and they're like, we want 10 years of Oracle, 10 years of Docker. But wait, Docker's only 6 years old. You know? 10 years of...
There was one that went around on Slashdot that wanted like 20 years experience in Linux and Java back when cumulatively together they were only like 9 years. How is that even...
Yeah. So I always tell people that are going into technology, I'm like, if you have like 10 or 15% of what they're looking for in the job rec, go apply.
Right.
You got nothing to lose.
Right.
What's the worst they're going to say? I applied to be the chief information officer of General Motors. They did not hire me, obviously. But
why
I applied.
Not? That would be awesome. I might not be worried about my car being kidnapped from a guy in the middle of the cyber war and driven into a wall.
Right.
Or just parked somewhere. Like, nope, you're not going anywhere.
But it costs you nothing to apply. And a lot of companies, you hire for fit, and you can train for tech.
Well, you know what the real problem is? The reason that people don't do it is ego.
Yeah.
They have a fragile ego, and they're just afraid. You know, I'm not worthy. I mean, how do you, you know... I mean, it seems like you know yourself, right? And that's the key to having a healthy ego, right? You don't want to be—you don't want to be a megalomaniac either. We want bosses like that. That's not helpful.
Right. I know what I know, and I know what I don't know. And the more you know, the more you realize you don't know. You know?
Right.
And I
known
think
unknowns.
Yeah.
No, seriously, that's the thing. Known unknowns, right? If you have a these are the things that. These are the things that I may need to know at some point for my current goals, which, you know, a career move is a goal. And then these are the things I know, and these are the things I don't know, and these things and the things I don't know are, I don't even know what I don't know.
Right.
Right? You have to have known unknowns.
Yep.
You don't even, because otherwise you'll waste your time on the things that you can't even define what they are.
Right.
And that's why you can't have a perfect match resume-wise.
Right, and you shouldn't even
I don't think about work, but you know. Bitcoin, baby! Anyway.
Yeah, people should just, you know, go on the fact that you have the ability to learn.
Right.
You know, you can figure it out. I truly believe that there's nothing, if I'm given the time, that I can't figure out, you know?
Right.
So just give me the chance.
That feeling is like a drug.
It is.
I had it, man. I've had it a couple of times, especially like my last gig. I was there. I was like, yes. Because when you finally get the space to explore your own abilities, you know, I think that's part of it. Is like, you know, when someone's busy pounding someone into the ground,
yes,
you know, they're just worried about surviving and where's the next paycheck. But once you get to that, you know, it's like there's a psychology behind this, like Kohlberg, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, not Kohlberg, Maslow. Maslow's hierarchy of needs, where if you don't take care of where's your roof coming from, where's your food coming from, where's your, you know, how am I going to survive week to week? If you don't get past that point where, you know, one bill can ruin you,
yes,
you don't think about the code.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's you don't want your employees to be in that situation because it prevents them from, I mean, you know, I guess you could be ignorant, right? And ignorance is bliss, right? You know, everything's fine. I hope it'll be fine. But, you know, eventually if you do that for too long, it burns you.
It's kind of like a Steve Jobs, so we don't hire smart people to tell them what to do. We hire smart people to tell us what to do.
Right.
You know,
right. Well, how many tens of thousands of companies fail every year?
Right.
You know, probably because they don't do that.
Yes, exactly.
Right? You know,
exactly.
Like Bill Gates said, if I surround myself with smart people, everything else is easy.
Yeah.
You know, I paraphrase him in one of my SIGs that go out in my emails. So
it's,
because he's right.
Absolutely. And if when I'm in the position to hire people, I always look for people that are smarter than me.
Right.
Why wouldn't you? You know?
Right. Right. If they're sucker.
Yeah. I mean, it's
like, oh my God, you figured out my show. Invite smart people. Let them talk. Sip coffee. Stroke beard.
Right. I mean, when you put together a team, you're going to sink or swim as a team.
By the way, do you want some wine?
Sure.
Okay, great. I have an alien corkscrew. A remover if it's stuck. It's not stuck.
It's all good.
Okay, good.
Thank nice. You.
Thank you so much.
Good. One more.
That's fine. All right, come on. I'm going to die. I'm a lightweight, man.
Yeah, so am I. I'm a cheap date.
Nice.
My wife is going to be like, wait, you're drinking?
Yeah, coffee on the table right there.
Oh, the coffee, too? Are we going to speedball with wine and coffee? Cheers.
Coffee chasers.
No. I'm going to go with the technocracy.
My daughter will be very happy because this is her favorite color.
Nice.
Right, and you have the red swingline stapler. I just noticed that.
Yes. So one of the shticks I do is I bring random props on. So that way when people look at the episode, they can visually identify which episode it is based on the props that are here. So today I've got a pirate hat and a red swingline.
I am the red swingline.
That is the one that they made after Office Space.
Really?
Yes. That is the one that swingline made in response to the demand after Office Space. The one in Office Space they painted.
Right.
Yeah. So and everybody called them up. Said, okay, where do I order a red stapler? And it was just easier to make one than deal with everyone. So that was the one that they made. That was the one of the first ones from the new line.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That was such a great movie.
And it's my stapler, too. I actually use it. I staple these with it on the way out.
I'm going to treasure this forever.
I bring it to work because it's a good shtick, you know, right?
Yep.
And people are like, hey, can I borrow that? No. Chase him around. So you want coffee?
I will never say no to coffee. Thank
you. All right. Now, how you take milk and sugar, or?
I'll just take some of that creamer there.
Okay, cool. Sounds good. Wow, you're not picky. Some people are very picky about their coffee. It's just like, it's just, you know, they just can't take it. It has to be exactly right.
I can't do Starbucks. That's my only limitation.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, someone just posted a great meme. Sorry, I'm going to get up here. Get some sugar. All right, you got sugar?
Oh, if you got sugar, I might as well put one in.
Yep. You got your creamer.
Thank you.
All right. And you got some stirs. Thank you so much for making coffee. I appreciate it.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah,
you get
so.
The mail.
The check is in the mail. No, that's the joke about the Czechoslovakian hunter.
One pot of coffee, $700.
See, they're starting to get it, right?
Yep.
You're not expensive, but priceless.
Right? You just sit, you have someone else do the work, and you just sit there and stroke your beard. And look thoughtful. Right. Yeah, so actually, I'm not going to say anything yet because I want it to be solid, but actually I heard that a rumor that one of my guests actually wants to start their own show, and to that I say, bully, that's awesome. So
yeah, more people talking about tech, the better.
Yeah, the more people talking about tech, the more people talking about open source,
yep.
The more people talking about pretty much anything that's interesting to me, right? Because I'm selfish and I just want interesting things to happen. So
and people on Long Island talking about tech is
right
thing too.
Right, I'm really bummed about the Amazon thing.
Oh, me too.
Yeah. I told my wife, I'm like, yep, that pretty much I can apply to any of those jobs.
Yep.
And then it went, and I'm like, no. But you know, it doesn't matter. Because it may not, by the time Amazon built it, they may not be as important anymore.
That's true, too.
Yeah, so, but, I mean, you know, between finance in New York City,
yep.
You know, finance, Jersey has its own scene, too,
yep.
On top of that. So there's some cross-pollination, you know, if Long Island or New York, you know, if our area, if the Long Island area is busy and there's nobody to work from here, they can draw on them.
Yep.
Which makes us able here to have more people. 110 is a tech mecca.
Yeah, it really is.
Know.
Yep.
And there's plenty of tech in Queens, and there's plenty of tech in Brooklyn.
Yeah, down by Dumbo. I was there a couple of weeks ago in the Dumbo era of Brooklyn. Oh, my God, there's, like, startups everywhere. I had no idea. I had no idea.
Well, thank you. Now you've made me trendy by association. So
there you go.
Yeah, because Brooklyn's definitely trendy.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm very hipster, by the way.
Yeah.
You can see
you're so clearly. I lie low. I don't let people know that I'm not a hipster, just in case that makes them happy, you know.
Right.
You know, it doesn't really matter once people start talking code. And actually, that's one of the things I love about our industry is it's just there's so many different kinds of people.
Yes.
It's just about if you're smart or not.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yep.
You know, there is no faking that intelligence and
it's funny. I learned early on in my career because actually when I worked at Cheyenne, a lot of the people there were Asian,
mm-hmm.
and the CEO was Asian, and I'm a bit of a foodie. I love all kinds of food.
Yes.
So
go on.
So like
I too am a fan of food.
I started getting invited to like these Chinese weddings, mm-hmm. and I'd be like, "What is that? Oh, I don't care. I'm just gonna eat it." And then you know, we hired a bunch of Indian people. I was like, "Ooh, I'll try that out." And one of my friends was Persian. I was like, "I'll try that out." So it's kind of like you know, program eat.
Awesome.
It was awesome.
Yeah. My favorite is when they had I worked at a bunch of labs, and of course they had these socials and banquets and wine tastings and stuff like that. So you know, everybody from the whole, you know, it's half scientists and half the people who work at the lab doing whatever, including computer science.
Yep.
You know, sneaking in and grabbing whatever. And my favorite was to just go out, grab a plate. You sit down. Now everybody's out of the office. It's quiet, so I can be productive. And I've got a plate of food, so munch. I mean, it's hell on the keyboards, but it works really well for the brain.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's why the keyboards are disposable.
But, yeah, I love the, especially in technology, there's, I don't know, something about technology and food and drink and stuff like that. And when you break bread with somebody, it's like,
right.
it makes it so much better.
Right.
And, you know, these people become, like, they're your friends. So it's not just like, I gotta go to work. It's like, I gotta go to work and, you know.
Right. Well, if you get in each other's heads, it saves some time and some energy when you're trying to convey those ideas that don't even have words yet.
Right.
And maybe also, which you just came up with.
It also builds a little bit of trust, like this guy's not trying to stab me in the back, he's not going to throw me under a bus,
mm-hmm.
and then you can take a risk. Because
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people in the workplace, they're afraid to take a risk because if I'm wrong, am I going to get fired?
A perfect example, right? Something that's completely beyond anyone's control. Zero-day exploits.
Yes.
Right? If your team is not tight, you're screwed.
Yes.
There's a thing called an advanced persistent threat. And this is something that extends beyond the IT field, but it happens. It's a concept that's critical to understanding IT security. So it's basically someone who's just sitting on your organization looking for a way in. You know, instead of somebody who's just walking along, you know, it's kind of weird because the analogies kind of break down because it's in the cyber world, you know, it doesn't necessarily match the regular world, but imagine someone walking through an apartment building in the middle of the day when everyone's at work and just trying every lock. That's just kind of a flutter. That's someone who's just trying everything. An advanced persistent threat would be somebody who is following you around, trying to read your RFID tags, trying to wait till you leave your key someplace conspicuous so they can grab it and do a clay of it,
yep.
trying to grabbing things you throw in the garbage so you can get your fingerprints. That's an example of an advanced persistent threat. And if there's a zero day, which is a way, you know, if there's a root exploitable zero day where someone can just walk into your machine and take it over, and you don't have a tight team where everyone's in each other's heads and you have not only a good procedure, but you have a tight community.
Yes.
You know, you're dead.
Yep.
Yeah. You've got an hour, you know.
Yep.
You know, I mean, because you also have the legs, so they have the announcement, and the odds are the advanced persistent threat already knows about the announcement. Now, it may take some time to actually do the thing.
Yep.
You know, they may have to have their computer grind on your computer for a little while, but the clock's ticking, you know. So you have, and then you have the time that it takes the vendor to do. whatever, yeah, to do whatever they have to do to fix the exploit, and then you have to download it, then you have to test it, and then you have to roll it out. I mean, you got to decide quickly what the plan is, and it's not always the same plan.
Right, exactly.
Because it can totally disrupt things. So,
and as I work with this guy, Matt Pascucci, who's a cybersecurity, I call him the cybersecurity weenie. we're a little bit competitive because I'm a cloud guy, so I'll tell him, I'll be like, you know, move to the cloud. You don't need to worry about the cybersecurity stuff.
Nice.
but he always says, he's like, as a cybersecurity person, you need to be right 100% of the time.
Right.
The bad guys, they've got time on their hands. They can sit at home for days, weeks, months in their mom's basement,
right,
you know, type it away until they find that crack.
So, all right. So I gotta go ahead and disagree with you there. It's not the mom's basement anymore. Not the investor-assisted threats.
Oh,
the
flutters. That's true. Yes.
The flutters, yeah. Yes. But it's a freaking cyber war out there.
It's a lot of money.
It's a government militia from China or Iran or Israel,
yep,
or Germany or Brazil or wherever it's from that wants to get you, either get you because they want you for their botnet, which is more of the flutter kind of attack. But also, you know, people have their own agendas. Governments have their own agendas. You know, their militaries generally tend to want to fill every single possible gap,
yep,
you know, and use every opportunity, because if they don't, then they're going to get into a 9/11 situation where their population, or at least their other politicians, will be looking at them and saying, why didn't you do something?
Right, exactly.
This is predictable. Why didn't you stop it?
There's a lot of money in it, too. I mean, there's private hacking organizations that do it for money. You know, whether they mercenary themselves out to governments or to crime syndicates or whatever, but, you know, there's a lot of money, so they're very, very good at it. And it's actually kind of scary.
Yeah. Right. Do you have any good stories about fighting off advanced persistent threats? Obviously, don't risk your infrastructure and give you too much detail. But
No. I think the biggest one was when WannaCry came out. Because WannaCry that attacked a vulnerability in Windows that was patched like 2 years earlier. It was a free patch you could download.
Mm-hmm.
And if you downloaded the patch, you didn't get hit. And huge companies, like probably one of the worst hit was Maersk, mm-hmm, the shipping company.
Mm-hmm.
They ended up taking half the machines in their data center, just basically chucking them out because it was faster to rebuild them. And while they were down, their ships are just sitting in the water because they can't do anything. They took billions. Yeah, exactly.
They wanted to cry. I whispered it.
And then after that was what NotPetya, I think, came after WannaCry, or was, mm-hmm, the other way around. But the second one exploited the exact same vulnerability.
And people are still vulnerable.
And they were still vulnerable. And that's the one that got FedEx and a couple of other people.
Here's the thing. Like, if you have a tight team and you have a plan,
yep,
you know, none of it's going to hit you. If you don't, you're probably not going to make a plan.
Right.
The same dysfunction that got you there in the first place. I mean, in fairness to, like, FedEx, it's enormous.
Yes.
Right? I mean, you know, they have a lot of stuff to do, and every little mistake is a $1 billion mistake.
Right. And everybody's targeting them.
Right.
So.
And everybody's targeting them because not only can you humiliate them and affect the stock price, but you can also steal some really good stuff.
Right.
You know, just by getting in there and changing a few addresses.
And you don't even have to hit them directly. Like, the Target breach,
mm-hmm,
actually didn't hit Target's computers. It hit one of their subcontractors' computers that did the credit card processing.
You didn't think I was going to talk about cybersecurity, did you?
Nobody expects that.
Nice. I was all spooky about it. I snuck up in there. So, you know, it's actually the perfect segue into... sorry, I'm still doing it. Isaac! It's a B-side. So you were one of the people who set up the B-sides conference.
Yeah, Matt Pascucci, who I mentioned before, was the organizer, and
you were still on the core team of people who actually set this up,
yep,
right?
Yep, yep.
So B-sides is a security conference in Long Island.
Yes, B-sides started this guy named Jack Daniel. That's his real name. You should check him out on Twitter. He's got long beard.
So in case you're not
hair.
Feeling manly about IT, you know.
Right. But this guy Jack Daniel
with a long beard.
He couldn't get into, I think it was RSA.
Yeah.
Many 8 or 9 years ago. So he was like, you know what? I'm just going to have a conference in the hotel across the street.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the B side of a record. And it kind of took off. And now there's B sides in cities all across the world.
So the B side of what was the record? It was a B side of.
Oh, I have no idea.
Was it a playoff of another security conference?
Yeah, RSA. Oh, I'm sorry. It was RSA.
Ah, so it was the B-side of
yes.
That was the idea. Okay.
So, and still to this day, the B-side Las Vegas is held, I think it's the week before RSA now.
Right, right.
So it doesn't compete. But, so Matt
You're
was...
going to know about all these security conferences if you keep watching us.
Yeah.
Because we had Isaac talking about Hope. He was one of the founders of Hope.
Oh.
And now you're one of the founders of the local B-side.
Yep, yep.
So...
It was such a good conference. We got to partner up with New York Tech. We went to New York Tech and we're like, hey, listen, we're looking for a
little bit.
Yep, yit.
The Texas say yit.
And we're looking for a little bit of space, you know. A lot of the B-sides are in universities. They get a couple of classrooms. And this guy, Mike Niesnich from New York Tech was like, hey, how about the D-Siversky Conference Center? We're like, what, the big castle building? And he's like, yeah, let's do it there.
The castle where people intentionally get married.
Right. So we're like, yeah, no pressure filling that up for the first B-sides on Long Island.
But yeah, it's too bad only like 50 people showed up, right?
Yeah, really. We were actually worried about that in the beginning.
Really?
And then, yeah, we opened the registration. And
silly
then,
mortal.
Yeah, the first day, 100 people registered. And we're like, we hadn't even advertised it yet. It was just word of mouth. And we're like, oh, no. This is going to be a problem.
We've done something terrible.
Right. But it turned out great.
How many people showed up?
We had close to 300 people there. Okay. And we had speakers fly in from as far away as Israel.
That's great.
It was awesome. This guy, Omri, from his company Minerva, flew in from Israel.
He's on my list, actually.
Oh.
I put Minor Killer on my list. So tell
okay.
us about Minor Killer and Minor Killer.
Minerva is actually, it's a really cool product. Basically, what it does is it looks for fileless malware. So kind of when you're browsing the internet and you hit a website and you download a file, your antivirus checks the file and says, hey, there's a virus here. Let's not open that. But if you pull down like a JavaScript and you're not actually pulling it onto your machine, it's just running in memory.
You're not writing it to disk.
Right. It's not writing to disk. Your antivirus never sees it. And you're hosed.
Do we need to have memory-based signature checking for antivirus now?
Well, what Minerva
does... Do they need to update the antivirus clients? Are there any that do it?
No, none of them do it. And
business opportunity.
Signature-based is done. People, signature-based, don't even waste your time.
Yeah.
Though AI-based ones are much better for the disk-based, like the Carbon Black, Cylance, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But what Minerva does is it looks for the ones that run in memory, and it also is not signature-based. So it says, hey, this guy is saying, am I running in a sandbox, meaning am I being tested to see if I'm bad code?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them are really smart. They'll say, no, you know what? I'm running a sandbox. I'm going to shut down for now, and then I'll wait for later.
Right.
So that they don't get caught. Well, Minerva says, yeah, you are running in a sandbox, and it shuts down. Then Minerva reports it.
Right.
And then you have time to go clean it up because it's not actually doing anything.
Right, right. So this is like totally changing the... So I was asking Lee about this. So he has said he hasn't seen this too much in the wild yet, but I'm sure that that's going to change because it seems like what Minerva was saying is that not only is it changing, it's changing with the speed at which it's changing is accelerating.
Yes.
Which means that any day now we're going to wake up and this is going to be the only kind of virus we're going to be dealing with
anymore. The cryptocurrency miners are all using that. And those guys, they do you a really big favor because they want to be the only malware running on your machine. They clean up all the other viruses and malware on your machine.
Right, because they don't want to waste any CPU cycles
right.
on some other dirtbags, you know.
So they can be exclusive, and then they only run when you're not using the computer, so you never notice that they're slow. And
right.
then they run so hard that they'll burn your machine out, because they'll run your CPU up to, like, you know, 110% on the reactor.
I'm really glad I got to ask you about it. So one of the things we didn't cover last time with this, but I'm really glad to ask you, it seems like no antivirus maker is covering this. None of them are doing memory scanning like Minor Killer or whatever is
right.
doing.
Right. No, Minerva's the only one that does
and
that
I wouldn't
right
even
now.
Have known this if I didn't go to the B-side. So
yeah.
Thanks for setting up B-sides, man.
It's a great product. I'll be honest, they're a great bunch of people, too. They're,
right.
You know,
they're
all...
funny.
Yes.
And they look nice. You know, I don't know. I'm in the back of the audience. I don't know. So... Well, they were nice to show up to your conference, right?
Yeah, and yeah. They sponsored it as well. So
they sponsored it.
Yeah, right? They were one of the sponsors.
Oh, by the way, totally into sponsors. If people are interested, you know, contact me. My stuff's up on the webpage. So
definitely do it.
I have actually an idea. I'm not going to name names just because I want to test it a little further. But web. Talking a little bit about Web 2.1, 2.5, Web 3.0, seems to be a major change. And there's a reason I brought up Gab in the beginning. I know a lot of people have politicized it, and I think it's just silly, even though they politicize themselves. But the point is that there's not a ton of competitors in that kind of Twitter Gab space where people are just shooting messages off to each other.
Right.
So Gab, the company, wrote a completely different product. And it's very interesting because it kind of ties back to Microsoft Smart Tags and ties forward to what I'm about to talk about. So I don't know. Is this too heady? It's kind of hard to describe. So let me tell you about. I have a theory. So I actually did a thing for Lilug, and I did a thing for Lee's group about web the various iterations of web. And so web 1.0 was one server essentially. That's basically like, oh look, I have a Linux box running a web server and you pound on it until it falls over.
Right.
And web 1.5 was where you build some technology to kind of second hand after the fact glue a lot of single standalone web servers together and make it look like a coherent unit when it really wasn't.
Right.
Some kind of distribution mechanism. Web 2.0 is ground up. Now stop me if you disagree with this.
Nope, I'm with you.
Okay, so Web 2.0 is kind of ground up, where your metadata sharing is built in from the start, and the software that's running on the individual machines was designed from the start to interact with each other in a non-obtrusive way.
Yes.
So this would be all the cloud stuff, all the social media. Web 2.5 is, or Web 2.1 to 2.5, depending on how you want to call it, is where it gets interesting. So one of the things that people have complained about social media, is that it's a walled garden. So basically, you're on Facebook or you're on Amazon, and there's a wall around you, and everything you do in there is available to you in there, but you leave, and that data is inaccessible.
Yes.
Right? So you're starting to see Web 2.5 apps where people are peeking over the wall. So the Gab app is interesting. It's called The Center. And basically, and this is kind of important because even if you hate that whole space or even hate the idea of Web 2.5, I don't know why you would, but you know, I guess if you're Facebook, you hate it.
Well, right.
Yeah, yeah. So, but it, you know, you're peeking over the wall, and you can actually put pages up, you can put posts up on any page, and anyone who has that client can use that to communicate with other people who are also looking at the page, completely separate from whoever's controlling that website.
Right, right.
So like for right now, there could be a dissenter page on Area 22 talking about our live talk, mocking us.
Never.
Like, you silly people! Right? And we would never know.
Right.
And so what the thing that's, this is, on the one hand, this has big implications for censorship, right? There's a lot of people out there who are saying, oh, we should censor. I can't sideline too much more because my head will explode. But no, censorship bad. Anyway. So, but even if, you know, there are cases like doxing where I agree with it.
Yeah.
You know, where people are doing something that's flat out illegal and directly harmful.
Yep.
So, but aside from that, I mean, you don't know what people are saying on this thing. And it's just this one piece of software from this one company. Now that someone's proof of concept it, there could be 100 companies doing this.
You're right, and you would never know.
And so the interesting thing is I found a company that's doing something like this for finding you a better deal on any shopping site you go to. So literally all you have to do is, and I worked for a shopping search engine for a while. I worked for a .com, the DoubleClick guys had started up a company called ShopWiki.
Okay.
And I worked for them, and they were trying to compete with Amazon and Google products, and you know, not really Amazon, because Amazon is also a seller.
Right.
But Alibaba was a better example.
Okay.
But it was just, they weren't that successful because it was a moving target. But also because you had to go to a separate site. It was a Web 2.0 technology what they were building.
Right, right.
And I think that Web 2.5 technology, I mean, even if you think, you know, even if someone's politics, you know, or not even politics, just, you know, snide comments or even clever additions to a web page aren't interesting to you, who doesn't like to save money?
Right, exactly.
So it was actually an ad on YouTube that I saw this too. I'm like, that's a really good ad. Once in a while, there's an ad for a product that I actually care about. So I'm like, I kind of care about that product, not only because it's going to drive the... I think that stuff like that's going to drive the revolution.
Yeah.
I think people are starting to peek over the wall, and the walled gardens are going to crumble. And yes, and I'm really excited about that because it's about time.
I think that's fantastic. I don't know. They do need to do something about the nastiness that's out there.
Right.
I think a lot of the anonymity makes people like people will say things online because they think they're anonymous, and you know they'll just say I'm going to be a complete asshole because nobody knows who I am. But I don't know. You would never say it in real life.
We know who you are.
Right.
Really? Really? Did you even understand half the stuff we were just talking about? We know who you are. Thank you. This has been a public service announcement from Technocrat Live.
But I think that would bring a lot of civility back to the internet.
Because,
you know, I mean, if your employer goes and searches your name and sees that, you know, you're
right.
A racist.
I think it's a server hack doing that today.
You know?
Oh, God. I gotta fix it again. Oh, he's being uppity again. Let's get him.
Yep.
Yeah, so Isaac did a great thing on anonymity. So okay, we'll come back to the ethics. I'm not sidelining it. Don't worry. I'm forking. Yes, not segueing. I'm forking. I'm forking off to talk about. So oh no, I've done it. I popped the stack. I've won too many sidelines. I forgot what I was talking about. Okay, so what was that thing again? It was a smart point about. All right, I'm going to have to come back to it. So, well, you know what? Let's talk about the ethics, and it'll come back to me.
Well,
so.
I should caveat the anonymity thing.
Okay, that's it.
I wanted to caveat it by saying that it will help stop the trolls, but there are times where you need anonymity, like if you're a freedom fighter in some repressive regime or something like that.
I see what you're saying. So here's the problem. Who's a freedom fighter?
Well, yeah, that's the problem.
That's the problem. And, of course, what does everybody do when this conversation comes up? Oh, you know, there's a saying, you have to be educated enough to get to a point where you know what you don't know, right? Known unknowns. I don't know. A lot of other people seem to know, even though they're less able to talk about it than I am, which makes me think that maybe they're full of it, and they don't know who's a freedom fighter. You know, what about somebody who sees it coming? You know, how far ahead do you have to see it coming before you're like, hey, yeah, okay, maybe he was right.
Right, right.
How many times do you have to be right before people take you seriously? You know, you can easily sideline someone, you know, who doesn't. So, yeah, so, you see what I'm saying. You totally get it.
So then do you say, all right, I'm going to let all this horrendous hate speech and stay out there and let everybody stay anonymous.
Right, right.
For the people that are truly oppressed so that they can stay anonymous. Or do you...
Well, what do you do... it's the problem on Gab, right? What do you do about the Nazis on Gab?
Right. And I don't have the solution, but that's the question.
Right. And I mean... And so, like... All right. So, one example of the problem that I'm demonstrating and the reason that it's so hard to draw a line is, like, there was... People are just saying, I wish they would stop beating up on white people. Right?
Right.
You know? And it's like... You can't get mad at them because they can't change the color of their skin. I mean, a great example is like a lot of people in New York are mutts. They might look white, but they're not.
Right.
So are they bad guys because they just happen to lose the genetic lottery where they look a certain way, but they're not. They're all mixed up. So how do you, you know, you can't tell that in a web post. That's crazy.
Right, exactly.
Right.
You, it's kind of like, what was that movie where the Black Klansman?
Right.
You know?
Oh, you're talking about the Dave Chappelle bit.
Well, they made a movie about it.
There was a Dave Chappelle bit,
where
he's a Black Klansman.
But there's this,
he's blind.
It's this black cop who's dealing with the Klan and on the phone, and he has them convinced that he's in the Klan. So when they actually want to have a meeting, they have to send a white cop because obviously they can't send him.
Right.
But it was, you know, if you're anonymous,
I think I heard about this.
You could be anything you want to be, and that's you get predators, you get hateful people, stuff like that.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
And I don't know. Somehow somebody smarter than me needs to figure out how you balance the free speech.
I think you're smart enough.
Protecting the.
I think the key is when people are ready to take action. That's the problem.
Yeah.
When people, it's, you know, you can be wrong in earnest, and it's not destructive. But when you're ready to take up arms, when you're ready to take action against other people that may infringe on other people's freedoms, that's the line.
Yes.
Right. So, and here's the reason why I'm okay with speech that I hate. Which is hate speech. You know, separating them, right? You have hate speech and you have speech that I hate.
Yes.
So the reason I'm okay with speech that I hate is because people need negative examples. And what I mean by that is you can use your own bad experiences and extrapolate them on top of something that's happened with someone else and go, and then empathy comes in. I mean, we can't write off empathy.
Right.
Right? I mean, yeah, okay, you can write them off in psychopaths.
Right.
But everyone else, you can't write off empathy, because empathy, I think, is the glue that holds us all together.
Yes.
And the problem with policing hate speech is that it's too easy to write off empathy and people's ability to look and decide for themselves and say, that's wrong. I couldn't be part of that. I can't be part of this. You know, I'm a good person, and that hurts people in a permanent way.
Yes.
You know, and I if they don't have that opportunity, if they don't see the negative case, you know, I get really nervous about Europe has all these rules about you can't have any Nazi stuff.
Right.
You know,
right.
You know, and I mean, sure, you don't want people driving around with Nazi swastikas, you know, painted on the roof of their car. But, you know, at the same time, it's part of their history. And when people see that and they go, and they see maybe the success of it, and they go, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's really easy for this to happen.
Yeah.
It's easy for a witch hunt to turn into a mania and for people to get the wrong idea and just run charging in a battle without thinking.
Right.
And if you don't see it, if you can't see it, if it's blocked from view, I mean, I have a couple of books on propaganda at home, and they cite examples. There's pictures of posters, and there's descriptions of rallies and stuff. And they're typically written by, like, Jewish organizations.
Right.
Trying to get people to say, hey, look at this.
Right. This
don't do this.
Right.
If it looks like this, it's a problem.
Yes.
But if you can't see it, you can't do that.
Right.
Yeah.
That's very true. That's very.
And it's a tough problem. I'm not saying that we can't.
Yeah, that I there's
we
gotta
can't
be,
judge. I'm just saying that we got to be careful when we do.
There's got to be some kind of balance.
I think it's action, man. I think that's the key. You know, unfortunately, in the case of that Philadelphia thing, the guy just said it and he ran off.
Right.
You know, he said it and he did it. There was no time to act in between. You know, I mean, probably the right public outcry was, hey, why didn't the FBI know about this guy? And as soon as he said, that's it, I've had it with your optics, that's what he said.
Right.
You know, as soon as he said that, they should have been at his house.
Yep.
Like, the same reaction, that would be the equivalent reaction to how people reacted in the 9/11.
Yeah.
When everybody was so hard on the presidency and the Pentagon and all that and said, why'd this happen? You guys knew Bin Laden was a bad guy. Why didn't you stop him?
It's kind of like cybersecurity, though. You know, they have to be right every time, 100%
of the time. Right, right.
And you know, the bad guy, he's only got to be right once.
Right, right. It's tough. Being good, I tell my kids all the time, to be good, you have to be strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to. It's not enough to want to be good. You actually have to have the strength and the resilience to carry through.
And you have to be good when nobody's watching.
You have to be good when I love it. My favorite kind of video on the net is when someone does something kind for someone and they don't think anyone's watching. And like there's a dash cam or a cam in front of like an office or something.
Yep, yep.
I mean, it's very rare that you know it's not staged, but once in a while you find one and you're like, ah. Oh.
My daughter.
Oh, I'm human. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there's humans out there. We're not doomed. Okay.
My daughter once, probably about 2 years ago, we were in Flushing, and I had bought from, I like street meat. I like, you know, the meat from the vendors on the streets. God knows what it is, but it tastes really good. So I
feel like we're a Demolition Man here.
I got a bunch of skewers, and so I gave two to my daughter. As we're walking by this homeless guy, and I'm assuming it was his girlfriend, and their dog.
Mm-hmm.
And she felt, my daughter's very empathetic, and she's probably about 12 at the time. Mm-hmm. She gave him both the skewers,
mm-hmm.
and he gave one of the skewers to his girlfriend and the other skewer to his dog.
Oh.
I was like, wow, okay.
That's nice.
So,
he's actually allergic. No, yeah. I didn't mean to ruin it, I'm sorry.
But, I was proud of her, but then I was like, but then she got to see him take her good thing and,
yeah.
You know, pay it forward, as it were, you know?
That's nice. Yeah, I like that movie, by the way, when that came, Pay
yes.
It Forward, that was a
yep.
good movie. Wow, that was a really tough topic, and I'm pretty sure that now we don't have an angry mob outside, so kudos, man. There's a lot of professional pros
I
that
see
can't
some
have
torches
that.
Out there.
Yeah, Hopefully the cigarette lighters.
Yeah.
Do people have cigarette lighters anymore? No, I guess it's the lights on their phones.
Yeah,
now.
The phone. I saw a concert video and everybody's holding up their phone. I'm like, that's right, you can't smoke inside anymore.
So I had something to talk about on the technical side of anonymity.
Yes.
So this is a great. I really wanted to talk to Isaac about it in public so I get him to say it, but I try to coax him into it, and unfortunately I think I just have to come out and say it. So. There's actually this misconception that aside from us doing the obvious stuff like, well, that's your IP address, I know where you are, I know what state you are, I know your IP address, if you're doing something illegal, I can go to a law enforcement agent and they can look it up with their ISP
right.
and find it in 2 seconds. But aside from that kind of stuff, even if someone's clever and they use proxies and they're smart about how they do things and you know, they do their best to not leave a trace, an anonymity on the internet is based in encryption.
Yes.
Encryption is not permanent.
No.
And I can't. I'm so ashamed that I didn't think of it. Total credit to Isaac for figuring this out. And he just blurted it out in the SBS meeting. But it's absolutely true. It doesn't matter how anonymous you are at the moment. It can also matter how anonymous you are in 20 years.
Right.
If they keep that session data, right, and that encryption, there's a flaw that's found later in that encryption. You're exposed completely.
Right.
Right?
And
so they may not get you now, but it's just like a murder investigation, right?
Right. And as the computers
get, you later.
Get faster, you know, what took 1,000 hours or years now might take 10 minutes later.
If somebody cracks quantum computers for a consumer market...
Yeah, that's it, you're done.
You know, yeah. that all the previous encryption types.
Yep.
So are you a Star Wars fan?
I am.
So I
like most sci-fi.
So I saw a great fan theory on Star Wars that explains why they do. I mean, the most recent movie I have trouble with, but this doesn't actually contradict that either.
Okay.
Just maybe it's luck, but there's no encryption in the Star Wars universe. That's why they pass messages with droids. You have to physically carry messages everywhere.
Maybe because they can crack them all.
Maybe they have quantum computers in that universe, and they can just crack them. I really don't think George Lucas thought of this. He just got
yeah,
lucky.
He got lucky.
But how awesome is that, right?
It's true.
Yeah.
That's true. You can stick the message on the pigeon, the carrier pigeon.
Right, right.
Let him go.
I don't remember where I saw it. I think it might have been Cracked, actually.
Oh, wow.
On their YouTube channel. They did a short, and they just talked about having to use droids to carry everything. It was kind of a part of a shtick, but I think it's true. I think that's what's going on in the Star Wars universe. Sorry.
I never thought about that.
Yeah. Because that's what it would look like, right?
Right, right, right.
I mean, if right, you know, there was... Back to, of course, Isaac thought of this, right? Because his pseudonym is Isaac
right.
from Sneakers. I assume you saw Sneakers,
yes,
right?
Yes.
If you saw Sneakers, I'm going to spoil it, so pause it here. So if you haven't seen Sneakers, so
it's worth seeing. It's a great movie.
It is one of the great quintessential hacker movies
yeah.
because it's accurate. It isn't always, you know, like First of all, Dan Aykroyd. That's all I got to say. Just Dan Aykroyd. But also, you know, yeah. And his code name is Mother. How awesome is that? And this is Gandalf
Sidney
or something.
Sidney Poitier, too.
Yeah, yeah. And the idea is that, you know, someone came up with a box that cracked all encryption.
Yep.
And, I mean, and the NSA, you know, saves the day at the end and basically absconds with it.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But, you know, it's... That is the end. No more secrets is the end of society as we know it. Civilization would quickly fall over dead.
Oh, my God. Yeah, could you imagine?
No, I mean, like, 20 years ago, it would have fallen over dead.
Right.
A lot of this, a lot of the encryption we just take advantage of now and take for granted was in heavy use in military and in back end for, like, you know, power plants and stuff, you know, in the older versions of the Internet.
Right.
But now, forget it, man.
And power plants and stuff like that, the whole SCADA network.
It's an arms race encryption.
Yeah.
You know, people, and that people don't realize that, you know, a part of that cyber war.
Yeah, but that whole infrastructure network of power plants and stuff like that, I mean, that's our Achilles heel in this country. That and IoT.
Right.
Those two things.
What do you think about the Internet of Things? Do you have a rant about it? Come on, I know muster a good rant about
my
this.
My big rant about it is that none of the devices are built with security in mind,
mm-hmm.
and almost none of them are upgradable. So if there's a security flaw in one of them,
mm-hmm.
you're going to, and somebody can now use it as part of a botnet,
mm-hmm.
you have to throw it away. Like, there's no way to field upgrade it.
Right.
You know, it's done, and you probably wouldn't even know that your camera is contributing to the destruction of society.
Right. So, I agree with you, and actually this is a huge pet peeve of mine, the Internet of Things. So, whose fault do you think it is?
I think the manufacturers, obviously, they want to save time and money, you know.
Lost some future potential jobs, but or maybe got some.
Right.
I really wish GM had, you said it was GM, right?
Yeah.
I really wish GM had hired you.
That'd be cool.
Not to pick on GM, because they're all doing it at this point, but my God, guys, really?
Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah, that would be. You'd fix it.
I would try.
You would totally, you would fix it, because you would lay it out in terms of liability, and they would go, and they would fix it.
I got to think at some point somebody's doing a calculation and saying it's cheaper to pay the lawsuits or cheaper to pay the liability than to build it all.
I completely agree with you. Yes, you're dead bang on, and that's exactly what's happening.
I can't assume that they're
that stupid.
They
only have to be wrong once.
Right. Yes. Right. Exactly.
Right. Like so. Here's the problem. So what we're alluding to, and what we haven't said, is that in your car, you have a network. There's a computer network in your car where all the pieces of your car talk to each other, including the pieces that are absolutely critical to making the car go. And they call it a CAN, or a car area network, which is kind of a nickname from a manufacturing network. Usually at least one of those pieces of equipment connect to the Internet.
Yeah.
So, you know, it may be in a clear-cut way, it may be hidden from you, but, like, for example, with GM, when they shut off their internet, you know, I have a GM, which, by the way, is now network isolated. but if you say, oh, disconnect me from OnStar, you're still connected.
Yes. Yep.
You're still connected to OnStar. And if OnStar gets hacked, or somebody does a man in the middle, or figures out how to directly exploit the encryption, which is aging every day,
yep.
sitting in your car,
yep.
you know, if you're not doing regular software updates, just like you would with your computer, the encryption could be expiring.
Yeah. Did you see? I don't know if you saw it.
Encryption expires. I guess that's the message, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the problem with Internet of Things. That's the problem with anonymity.
Yep.
You know, people don't realize encryption expires.
And in cars especially, I don't know if you saw Toyota open source their car hacking tools.
Really?
That they use to test test the security in cars.
That's amazing.
It's on GitHub.
You get this stuff. Where do you get this news? Is there like a news source you go to? I don't want to make
I must have seen it on
secrets.
Twitter. No. I have like no mysterious things.
Kudos. But that is really important, because
security
Twitter? We're always a day away from a catastrophic terrorist attack.
That stuff scares me, but like pacemakers and stuff like that.
Oh,
God forbid I ever need one of those devices. I'm going to be like, yeah, that better not be connected to the internet or
right.
No Bluetooth. No, not so
I
turn all that
I
off.
Had to work to find a boiler that didn't have Wi-Fi.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, my boiler went like a year or two ago, and I had to work to find one that didn't have a Wi-Fi connection. I mean, it would be neat to see what my boiler's doing and connect to it. Look at me, I'm connected
right.
to my boiler. You know, and someone else drives by, hey, look at me, I'm connected to his boiler. I'm going to burn his house down. I burned his house down.
Like, why does my refrigerator or my coffee machine need to be on the internet?
At least you can't burn your house down. Well,
right.
A coffee machine, maybe, yeah.
Right. But, yeah, but I mean
we put an IP address on a coffee machine once in the office, like 20 years ago. It's a joke.
Right,
it's a
right.
joke.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to do this.
Right.
It's a joke, people. Anyway, sorry. It's supposed to be a shtick. You're not supposed to have your... I mean, you know, all right, no one wants to learn how to program the timer on
right.
their coffee. That's what's really going on. People are sick of learning new interfaces. You don't want to learn how to use the timer and the clock and all the stuff on your coffee maker.
How many people
You just want to go boop and have it show up in Mr. Coffee Coffee Maker and go boop, and then you use the same kind of software interface you're used to on your computer.
Right. I think that also
that
separates people. You know, that divides us into technologically savvy and not. Because I mean, if my mom got a coffee machine that was internet capable, she couldn't get it on the Wi-Fi.
Well, maybe there's like three tiers, right? I guess it's right. So you have on the one hand, you have the people who are like, I'm just going to get the old school one,
right?
With LEDs and like a little tiny embedded chip, and it just has a quartz clock in
right.
it, and that's it. And then you get the tech savvy, but not that tech savvy crowd,
right?
And they're like, yes, I'm going to get an internet connected coffee machine, and I'm going to control it from my smartphone, and I have a hot pot of coffee when I get home. When I get home, hop off the train and walk into my house, and it's gonna smell like coffee or hot cocoa or whatever I left stuck in there.
And you got people like us who put a pot on the stove.
And you get people like us who like, we see the code in our head, and we're like, no.
Nope.
No. I'm going to sheep herding. I'm done with this.
Yep.
How far can I get away from civilization?
Right.
Have you ever thought about relocating from New York? Have you
yes.
considered it?
We were thinking about moving to North Carolina.
Oh, cool.
And I love it down there. My parents actually retired to North Carolina, but we love it down there. It's beautiful.
Nice. What was your criteria for where you want to live?
Well, we want a cheaper cost of living, but we still wanted to live in a metropolitan area. We like city type stuff.
Right.
We like that kind of more metropolitan feel. We were looking around Charlotte, the Charlotte area.
Okay.
And,
I know in Raleigh, North Carolina, that's where Red Hat originated.
Yes. Yeah.
So there's a big tech space over there.
Yep. And there is in Charlotte.
I don't know how much of that was Red Hat, but it's definitely
Red Hat,
now.
Cisco, IBM.
Okay. So
now IBM and Red Hat are the same. And
oh, yeah. What do you think about that?
I hope IBM doesn't destroy Red Hat, because Red Hat does some really awesome stuff.
Right.
I mean, like, I like their OS. Plus, I'm an Ansible user. If IBM screws that up, I will not be happy.
Right.
So hopefully they just leave them alone, let them do their thing.
Well, that would have catastrophic effects on the cloud if they screw up Ansible.
Yes,
yeah.
It really would.
Yeah.
I have to think, like, I just saw the what we use for logging.
I'm a fan, too. I really like it, so.
For logging, like, all of our devices that send their logs, we use Elastic, which is a database search type engine.
Why don't you explain what Elastic is in a little more detail?
Elastic is, it's like a database. It's very well designed to bring in log type data from like routers and servers and computers and stuff like that.
So it's like a piles of text flying at me aggregator.
Yes.
Okay, great.
So
that's a great way to
it's a great way to put it.
Right, because otherwise you just spend, because in case you don't, so one of the reasons we know it's a cyber war out there is because we look at our logs.
Yes,
and
we see
what you can look up the IP addresses that are attacking your machine. You can see where they're from. And sometimes they're from military-ish cities in different countries. And you're like, well, gee, I know what this is. This is a cyber militia.
Right.
Right? So, but I mean, it's just like, it's just piles and piles and piles of logs.
Yes.
I mean, in the old days, like 10 years ago, that's the old days now, you would go in and you work and you would spend hours looking at logs just to make sure nothing's gone wrong.
And now with Elastic, you can create rules and do all sorts of stuff to sort through it. Well, Elastic added, it was open source. The database piece of it is open source.
Right.
But they're a company, so they did... they went a different way than Red Hat. Red Hat said, we're going to keep everything open source, mm-hmm. we're going to charge you for support, and we're going to charge you for, you know, if you want the really supportable stuff, but you'll always be able to get the open source, which will be cutting edge features for free.
Right.
And that's what a lot of people do. That's people experiment with that. It's a great ecosystem. They make obviously a lot of money because they sold for like $3 billion.
To who?
Big Blue.
Red Hat
and IBM.
Sorry, for some reason I was thinking Elastic. And
well, Elastic just went public. But what Elastic did was they said, all right, our database is open source. Our little web front end is open source. But all the tools around it are going to be closed source. So like adding security to it, doing monitoring of your cluster, alerting, all that stuff. We're going to charge you money for all of those pieces.
Right, right.
So the mixed model. Right.
So the infrastructure is open source.
Right. So what happened was big users of Elastic were Amazon, Netflix, people like that. Well, Amazon, Netflix, and Expedia got together and said, you know what? We don't like this model. We don't like this model at all because we don't want to pay for it. So they said, we're going to take the Elastic database. We're going to take Kibana, which is the graphical front end, and then we're going to rewrite all of their tools that they're charging money for,
right?
And we're going to open source them. And they released it.
That is phenomenal. That is so awesome.
They released it about a week after Elastic went public.
This has all happened in the past few weeks.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Holy cow. So this has been a great month for open source.
It really has.
So it was Toyota was open source their car hacking tools. And who was it that...
It's Amazon, Netflix, and Expedia.
Oh, okay.
And they put out this this blog post, basically a shot across the bow saying, you know, if anybody else considers doing this, we're going to do the same thing to you.
Nice. That's amazing. Yeah, it's so weird seeing Amazon, Netflix, and Expedia. I don't think of Expedia as kind of in the same.
No, me neither. But
you know, it's kind of like and tonight, Anthrax,
yeah.
Twisted Sister, and Boys and Men. Yeah. Okay. Sorry, Expedia. I'm sure you're awesome, and you probably have a $100 billion market cap, and I didn't even realize. But you know,
right. But Netflix, I mean, they're huge in the open source world.
Right.
Their entire infrastructure pretty much is open source. And Amazon has been a really good partner as well. And surprisingly, Microsoft has become a really good open source partner.
Right.
Even an open source calculator.
Wow, they did?
Yeah.
That's great. Was there a flight simulator inside of it?
Yeah, I wish.
There wasn't one in Excel, by the way, if you didn't hear about that.
But yeah, it's that whole.
I guess that could be another measure, right? You have time to penis. I'll explain that in a minute. And now you have time to flight simulator. Which I guess is just the time to open sourcing it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Or TTP, anyway. So, yeah. Well, I'll explain TTP later. I'll put that on my list. Go ahead, keep going.
But yeah, Microsoft has really embraced it as well under their new leadership,
right.
which is fantastic.
Right.
It's all good for the community.
Right. So the way Microsoft actually, I don't know if anybody, you remember the Halloween documents?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Microsoft was like really like people think I was just might just think I was glossing over this with Lee and I was like kind of buttering him up, but I really do think Microsoft's a good guy right now.
I do too.
Yeah. I mean, who knows in 10 years? But right now they're the good guys.
Yeah.
Back in 2000 they were this horrible Cthulhu monster that was just consuming everything that they could, and
yep.
really nobody could get free of them. All the software ran on them, and they would punish people who didn't exclusively partner with them.
Yep.
And then basically they were plotting, openly plotting inside of the Microsoft company against open source.
Yes.
I mean, it's kind of like plotting against the Red Cross because you want your hospital to make more money.
Right.
Like, what? And they got caught, and that came out in a bunch of documents called the Halloween documents. And after that, they slowly started turning the ship. They were like, okay, this isn't working. And so what originally they did is they kind of like made it an open space within Microsoft. So the people, they opened up the boundaries within Microsoft. And this is kind of like the DevOps kind of model in their
yeah.
you know, before it was DevOps and everybody was talking about it.
Yep.
Where they were just making it so everyone within Microsoft could talk to each other. And then And then more recently, they've been actually opening stuff up to the public. And it seems like, it's almost like it's addictive.
Yeah.
Like the more they do, the more they want to do.
I think they've realized awesome. That their future is not in selling boxes of software. The Windows licenses and Office licenses are not it. I mean, I it's kind of funny because people would buy Office. It was like $400 to buy Office.
Right.
I could never afford Office for my own personal use. I got it from somebody else.
Right, right. And, you made your job by it.
Right, exactly.
You want me to open that document? Office, please.
Yeah. But now, I mean, with Office 365, I pay $9 a month. Everybody in my family, I get, what, 5 copies? So everybody in my family has it for $9 a month. And
is it worth it?
Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely.
Because I'm like a huge open office user, so like, I mean, I like haven't had a problem with it lately. What's the advantage of using 365 over open office?
It's a full version of Office. So like, you know, my wife uses it professionally. I use it for.
Do you get support with it? Have you ever used it?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's like a full version of Office, and you always have the latest version. So like, I'm on my Mac, I run Office 2016. When 2020 comes out or whatever the next version is, I'll automatically get that. I don't have to pay for it or anything. I get it.
Right.
And Microsoft now has a predictable revenue stream because every month they're going to get $9 from me. Actually, I pay annually, so I get the month free. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's
right.
But it gives them a very predictable revenue stream.
If they knew who you were, they'd give it to you for free. I mean, we just did a 5-minute stick on Microsoft advertising for them. Seattle's kind of nice this time of year.
Yeah. Call me.
Hey, call me. Anyway.
But, I mean, the services is where it's at. I mean, I know people that used to potentially illegally download music.
Right.
But now I can pay.
Oh, come on. Everyone on Earth knows people like that.
I, of course, never did that.
Yeah, right. Come on, man. I mean, come on. All right, if nothing else, you probably had to do it in your cybersecurity role at a job.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you get a takedown request from the RIA, and you're like, all right, I got to see if this is real.
Right.
Because, you know, you're about to go beat up a user who may be important.
Right.
Because he's like, free movies. You know, and like, come on, man. At work, really? At
right.
work, really?
I know.
We weren't going to notice. You're not anonymous.
I always tell people at work, if you wouldn't show your grandmother, don't do it.
Right, right, yeah. If you wouldn't do it with your boss watching.
Right, yeah, don't do it.
And his boss, just in case you get along a little too well with your boss.
Right.
I guess that's a consequence if everybody's like starts getting too chummy, right? You know, all right, whatever, let it slide. Yeah, I remember in the early days of the MP3s, you know, when MP3 format first came out, and like, I mean, I went to a web page. This was in the 90s. I went to a web page, and it had every single Nine Inch Nails song on. It was a handwritten HTML page, and he just dumped them all in a directory.
That's awesome.
And you could just download them, and you know, and the funny thing is, so like, you know, I can hear the 2002 version of Lars Ulrich just screaming at me.
Right.
You know, he's a drummer for Metallica, in case you don't know. they had this whole thing where they came out against it. But I bought the albums. Seriously.
Yeah.
I wasn't that into Nine Inch Nails. I mean, I was, but, you know, everybody's into Nine Inch Nails. But
right.
I was into the 5 songs that they played in the club. You know,
yep.
I wasn't, and maybe one album, right? But I went and I listened. I'm like, these guys are great.
Yeah.
I went and I bought all the albums. And I think that's one of the things that they, you know, they didn't have to vilify. The RIAA and the MPAA did not have to vilify themselves as much as they did.
No. And I mean,
they were pretty goofy with that.
Finding just like, you know.
They just couldn't handle the model change.
Right, but now I pay $9 a month to Spotify. Listen to whatever I want.
Yeah, Pandora's trying to con me into doing that too. But right now I'm just like, I'll accept the randomness because I spent a long time building the station, so they're pretty good.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
No, I like, you know, it was the ads and the inability to skip. That's what made me pay.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But my daughter still does Pandora for free, and she will not switch. I was like, I can share my Spotify for another $5.
I still
buy
CDs. Do you buy CDs?
I don't.
I totally buy CDs.
I haven't bought
a CD. I do not trust any media service whatsoever. I have a tower It's like something out of Lord of the Rings. I have CDs in my house.
I have a lot of CDs. I have a lot of vinyl too. I loved.
Do you have a working phonograph
right now? I do.
Nice.
my wife.
See, you are a hipster. You weren't lying. You were telling the truth.
But I bought my albums when they were new.
Right.
I'm ashamed to say the first album I bought, I was maybe 14 years old.
Yeah.
Was Sean Cassidy.
Really?
It's embarrassing. But then I bought the Beatles. I made up for it with the Beatles. And then Pink Floyd.
Wow. Oh, total redemption with Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
Excellent. Those guys are, so I have a secret. Actually, I have a secret to tell you about myself. So do you have hack music? Do you have like the frizzle fry, I call it?
The frizzle fry.
The frizzle fry, when you're just in the zone. And when I was talking with Rich called it the ether. He called it the flow, and I called it the ether. But like when you're just in the zone and you're programming, and like the world just vanishes and just fades away. Is there a kind of music you like for that?
Techno.
Techno?
Yeah.
That's awesome. I can totally picture you with glow sticks right now.
Yeah, I put on the headphones, and I'm just like going at it.
Yep, awesome. You're not going to believe what it is. My subconscious imposed this on me. I did not choose this.
Just don't say country.
Neil freaking Diamond. When I go into deep hack mode, my brain switches to Neil Diamond. And it's weird because like I'll be listening to heavy metal before that. And I'll be like cranking along to like Slayer or Static X or something.
Yep.
And like, you know, and then I'll go into deep hack mode and my brain will and just Neil Diamond will come on, you know.
Oh, wow.
Turn on your heart light or something, you know.
Yeah, no, I really need to focus. It's techno. And then if I'm just like lightly working, I'll listen to stuff like Nine Inch Nails or Tool.
It's a great sound shield. It's a new weapon.
Tool album coming out, by the way.
There is?
Yeah.
They're finally
coming out with it.
Oh, good. Yeah, one of the scientists at my last gig was a huge Tool fan, and every time he saw me, he was like, Tool! He was so happy there was another person there that liked Tool, you know, because everyone was so serious about. Actually, I know half of them were.
I'm actually a little wild side. I'm a little superstitious
side.
When I'm trying to fix something that's broken, like if I'm trying to fix a router that's broken or something like that. Beastie Boys,
awesome, man, nice. Is it like old school or the newer stuff?
Any Beastie Boys.
Any Beastie Boys.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
The older stuff is better, but I'll do anything.
Right.
So I'll suffer.
I know a lot of people didn't like it, but I was really psyched when they used that Beastie Boys song in the Star Trek movie.
Yes. Yep.
I was like, yes. and they found a shtick where they had a reason to use it.
I mean,
it was a little clunky. They could have smoothed it over more, but I was good with it.
I'm very happy. I have a successful dad story. I passed on at least a little bit of a musical taste.
My poor kids think heavy metal is normal.
my daughter, we're driving in the car, and on the Southern State, and a funeral procession goes by, and she goes, Dad, wouldn't it be cool, like, on the way to the funeral, playing Stairway to Heaven, and on the way back, playing Highway to Hell? I was like, awesome!
I didn't know you had this side to you. I'm glad I had you on the show. That is totally awesome.
She's only 13.
Well, that's really great, and she's like totally exciting, like the right. I mean, that's a big pool out there, and she's picking the right.
Yeah,
you're proud, man. You should be proud.
She'll listen to. She likes the modern music that kids listen to.
Right.
I don't even know.
Dubstep was a couple of years ago, and I think there's something newer too. This is some acoustic more acoustic kind of stuff.
I don't know. Well, she'll be listening to whatever it is she's listening to, and then on Pandora, and then like Rage Against the Machine will come on. I'll be like, yes.
Nice. So my older kid is definitely a self-professed 80s kid. He just loves everything 80s. Movies, music, the whole nine yards.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So my younger kid, he's more in tune with what's going on, the modern music. You know, they had parody versions. It's funny, they know the parody. We played the parody versions of a lot of the modern songs. Because people would make Minecraft parody versions, and they were really into Minecraft.
Yes.
So they would watch Minecraft music videos with parody versions of popular songs, and they don't even know the other songs. They just know the parody versions of the songs.
Right.
I mean, I don't even know how they got away with it. I mean, some of those songs would have like 14 million hits on YouTube.
Yeah.
And like, they're total copyright violation. I mean, they're just ripoffs.
Right.
They just changed the lyrics. They even, like, you know, they just used a karaoke track and sung new lyrics over it.
You know what kids miss out on now. When we were kids, we had Looney Tunes and stuff like that. They all had classical music playing in the back.
Yes.
So I mean, you were exposed to all that, and like they totally miss out on that whole thing.
Oh, spectacular! I agree. You know, my younger one used a Bugs Bunny reference to please my wife the other day. Oh, by the way, my wife has said she's not going to watch the show, so I can just say any old stuff I want about her. So it's on. Yeah. I put on 2001 the other day, and I wasn't sure how it was going to go because, you know, it's a very slow movie.
Yes.
I kept expectations super low.
Yep.
And, I mean, like, as soon as the space scene started, you know, first the monkeys, they were acting like monkeys.
Yep.
You know, they're young enough that they can goof around and act like monkeys. And then the space scenes start, and they're slow-moing, playing catch, floating through the living room. And then the younger one got bored, but the older one survived the whole thing. And in the end, he's just watching the thing with the... Oh, I'm sorry, I'm spoiling 2001. Whatever, man. You know, come on. People have lived and died and that movie's been out.
What are you doing, Dave?
You know, not even... Well, I wanted him to see that, right? Because just that alone is like critical AI information,
yes.
Right? But at the end, with the giant baby, and he's like, giant baby, what? Giant baby, what? He just couldn't process what he was hearing. I'm like, that's Kubrick. Watch more Kubrick.
Yeah. Yep.
I see a bright, you know, so that's 80s kid, you know.
Was a Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah, we haven't gone there yet. I really miss Gunny. I wish he was still around.
Oh, yeah, me too.
He was awesome.
That was such a good movie.
Yeah, he was actually the Victory spokesman. You know, I'm a Victory guy. I don't know if you ride Victory motorcycles. And
yep, one of my friends does.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, there's a few of us. There's quite a few of us on Long Island. You know, I was lonely at first. The best reaction I ever got when I first bought it, and I pulled up, and there's some older biker, mm-hmm. like, you know, and he's just like, what is that? What is that? He just said that for 10 minutes. He just couldn't even comprehend that there was a new motorcycle company that he hadn't heard of. It just didn't, like, what? I'm like, it's American. He's like, what? It's Polaris, you know, the snowmobile company. What? Yeah, they've been trying. They've modernized the Indian motorcycles a lot. I think they're trying to win over the Victory people.
Yeah.
So trying to get them to come over, you know, like, we're sorry, we didn't mean to kill your favorite brand, but here's an Indian that looks a lot like a Victory.
Right.
And, you know, it's the same people designing it, so it's tempting, but, yeah, I don't know.
When I was a kid, my mom told me I couldn't ride a motorcycle as long as I lived in her house. Then I got married, and my wife's like, you cannot ride a motorcycle.
You ride?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
I've ridden a motorcycle twice. I rode a Harley, like a small Harley, which was really cool. And then I rode a Ninja, which scared the life out of me, because you're like staring straight down at the ground. So you're going 5 miles an hour, but you feel like you're doing 90.
So riding gave me a great experience. I was working with a Marine in tech.
And, oh, wow.
And he came to me, and he just told me this story about how his one experience with a motorcycle was a sport bike, and he got on the sport bike, and he put a full helmet on. You know, when you put a full helmet on, it just completely shields you from the world. And
right.
You really don't... I love half helmets, because I feel the wind on my face. You know, right. It's like reminding you, like, you're a bag of meat
right.
flying over concrete at 70 miles an hour.
Right.
You put that full helmet on, you're like... You're just gliding. You're like, I'm in Tron. You know? And like, he had that experience, and he got in his driveway, and he was so nervous about what he had just experienced. You know, he's a macho guy. He went through with it. The bike fell over in the driveway.
Oh.
And he just turned to me. He's like, I don't know how you do it. I'm like, that guy's a Marine. He's telling me he doesn't know how to do it. I must be pretty awesome.
Right.
No, I'm not awesome. Don't kill me, please. Just, yeah. Marines are awesome. But yeah, I was, they're scary, man. Sport bikes are crazy.
Yeah.
It's so easy to just slip up to 130 and not even know you're doing it.
Yeah, and you see, you know, kids in traffic, they're like popping wheelies down Southern State, and mm-hmm. then, you know.
I heard a story direct from someone who died on a sport bike, and it was just a fluid leak. They did a wheelie. There was a leak. Their engine was leaking somewhere, and a little bit of oil leaked, got on the back tire. Back tire got a little wobbly. They did a wheelie, and they were dead. Because they were like 80 when they were doing it, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, so that's why, you know,
You don't do wheelies?
I have done wheelies, but not intentionally. It was just enthusiasm. It wasn't showmanship.
Right.
it was zeal. It wasn't craziness. how do we get into motorcycles? I don't know. Whatever.
It's all good.
I love this show. This is so fun. I could do this forever, you know. I don't know. Are you having a good time?
I am, actually.
Right? Cool, good. All right, so there's so much to talk about. I mean, this is 4 pages, people, and we've had 4 shows that expanded from 2 to 4 pages.
Wow.
So we could do this all night. So one of the things I wanted to say about, I think I can come all the way back. All the way back to this huge cliff, falling off the cliff tangent we went over. All the way back to tech with the Internet of Things. I think I can come back. Oh, right. So, no, my notes suck. I don't know what I was talking about. I was going to talk about the walled garden. So I have a theory. So, and this is kind of like the weird thing. So, well, let's talk first about open source and Internet of Things. So, you know, open source seems like it could solve a lot of problems, right? You have all these devices everywhere, and a lot of them are based on open source code. A lot of them are running Linux underneath,
yep,
or BSD, and there's no accountability whatsoever.
No.
For the security of them, and there's no way to get the problem is there's no patch. There's no guarantee of a patch schedule.
Right. Exactly.
So one of the things I want to see happen, and I tried to talk to somebody from Red Hat. I went to a Red Hat conference a couple of years ago, and they were just like, "Eh, whatever." I'm like, "You have the perfect opportunity," but I guess maybe they didn't see it that way. They just didn't have the market push to do it. But I wish somebody did have the market push to do this. I mean, they really, if you're selling a refrigerator, right? Right. So I think in economics they call them durable goods.
Yeah.
If you're selling durable goods, if you're selling a thing that's supposed to last for 20 years, you should have a 20-year patch schedule.
Yes.
You can't end of life something, the internet support and the patchability, for something that someone's going to keep for half their life.
Yes. Yep.
You know, and this is a huge problem. And the thing is, there's absolutely no projections, well, except for Toyota.
Yes,
go Toyota. On when to expect, what to expect, you know. I mean, you know, people restore cars from 20, 30, 40 years ago, and they just need the knowledge of how the thing works.
Yes.
You know, if these black boxes cease to be supported by the manufacturers, and they might swear they're not going to do it, but that doesn't mean they won't, right? All it takes is a change of management, and the policy can change.
Right, and what happens, like, if you have a new, like, you know, you get an old, like, 69 Mustang or something like that, you can rebuild that thing from scratch. It's all mechanical.
Right.
But if you have a 2016 Mustang, mm-hmm, it's got a computer in it.
Right.
What am I going to do in 2050,
right,
when I can't buy that computer anymore?
Right, right. So, like, frequently what will happen, so I don't know if do you like do hot rods or anything?
No.
So I do, you know, and so what will happen is there'll be a manufacturer that'll have a platform, and they'll have their software, and they'll have a device, and they'll figure out the image that's on the car computer, you know, just the car computer, not talking about the rest of the CAN bus, which could have its own problems.
Right, 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 right.
But just the car computer. And they'll figure out how to either they'll sign a license agreement with the manufacturer, or they'll reverse engineer it and clean room it, and they'll figure out a workable way to flash new parameters into the computer system,
right,
to make the car run differently. So the problem is, you know, guys will buy this stuff, right, and put it in their cars, myself included.
Right.
Fortunately, it's an old school car, so it just has the car computer, no other computers.
Yep.
And what if the support ends? What if a new requirement, you know, let's say they change the law, and you have to be able to flash it back to a stock computer just to get through inspection, and then you can flash it back to whatever you want.
Right, right.
I mean, I don't think it'll be that benign if they ever go that route, but let's just imagine they did. You're screwed.
I saw in Europe, I was reading online, I think today, in Europe they were saying in like the next few years, cars are going to have to start having speed limiters in them so that you can't go over a certain speed, and they're going to start building infrastructure that will be able to talk to the car to tell it what speed you can't go over in Europe. And they say it's going to save millions of lives.
If I could throw this table through that wall right now, I would. That is insane.
It is. I don't know, if you're going to do the crime, do the time type thing. But, you know, if I want to drive 80 miles an hour,
Right. Aside from that, aside from the Autobahn problem, where you're doing it for just pure joy.
Right.
You know, one of the reasons, you know, I know you don't ride, but I can tell you this with authority, and I don't think anyone's going to disagree with me. If you ride a motorcycle, you know, one of the reasons that people like to get motorcycles with big engines, even though they're heavier and harder to handle, is because if you have a nice, powerful, you know, 60, 70, 80, 90 horsepower engine and not a lot of weight, if you get into trouble, you just blip the throttle and you're out of there.
Right, right.
Not anymore, I guess.
Right.
Right? You know, like, I mean, you can, it doesn't happen very often, but it only has to kill you once and you're dead.
Right, exactly. And it doesn't matter anymore.
It doesn't matter anymore. If my speed limiter blocks me from getting out of one bad situation that gets me hurt or killed,
right,
that's the fault of the people with this brilliant idea.
Yeah. I mean, look how the technology's helped with that 737 MAX 8 plane.
Right.
You know?
No, I mean, like, I understand that there's, you know, like, I don't know. I'm kind of libertarian on this, so it's just... I understand that you maybe why they put an absolute limit on sport bikes. So the example of motorcycles, sport bikes, they put a limiter, a legal limit. You can't go more than 217, I think.
Oh, okay.
Because it was like in like late 2000s as opposed to 2010s. You know, there was just this huge competition going on.
Right.
It was trying to come up with faster and faster and faster sport bikes, and you know, people get killed.
Right.
They just hit the throttle until it doesn't go anymore.
Right.
You know, and. But on the other hand, I mean, I don't want to stop people from making their own crazy decisions, you know?
You got to help Darwin out.
Yeah. That's brutal, dude. Oh, that's brutal. But it's true.
It is.
Well, because, you know, like, I've been to helmet-free states. I wear a helmet. I feel dorky, but I don't care.
Yep.
Because I don't want to crack my skull open.
I don't want to fall off my bike
twice. It happens.
Yep.
You know, and sometimes it's completely beyond your control.
Yeah.
You know, you can always go back and find a mistake you made, but, you know, sometimes it's just, you know, the circumstances are beyond your control, and if you have good gear,
yeah,
you know, but, like, it should be my choice.
Yes.
I don't agree with helmet laws. I think they're garbage. You know, maybe they should mock you at the DMV, like, look at no helmet guy. You know, make fun of you.
Right.
But, you know, like, I like peer pressure. I like social pressure, but I don't know. As a technocrat, came back around, as a technocrat, you understand the technical limitations of the thing that you're working with better
yes.
than maybe somebody in the outside looking in. And yeah, maybe they had good guidance, and maybe they're well-intentioned, and maybe there aren't going to be any unforeseen consequences. But those are three big maybes.
Right, exactly.
You
and
know?
You're asking government to do that.
Right. Well, even if it's not government, even if it's a societal organization or government at any size, you know, whether it's a town or a nation... or the world, you know, it's just there's that huge disconnect between the doers and the talkers.
Yes.
You know?
Yep.
You know, and I just hate taking the power away from the doers because I feel like they're in the best at the ground at the work. You're in the best position to make the choice. I don't know. Is that right or?
Yeah. No. I agree. I think the more you can push further down, the better off you are. Because you know it's kind of like if you're in war, the grunt soldier is on the front line. He knows what's going on there. The guy that's
right,
in Washington has no idea.
Well, the military is a weird case.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, because all war is secrecy.
Right.
Right. You know, all warfare is lies. Right. So and secrets. So you have to kind of like you have to keep this massive organization organized, and yet you can't let anyone else know what you're doing.
Right.
Because that'll kill you fast.
Right.
Loose lips sink ships.
Yes.
But military is kind of a special case. So
yep.
You can't use that. You can't use military as an example for society.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Although a very military certainly does produce some really good quality members of society.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. I've always had...
For some reason, this hierarchical top-down structure creates people who can make good decisions for themselves.
Yes.
Which is weird. Not always, obviously. I mean, there's always exceptions to every rule.
Yep. You know what? I think I have a lot of friends that have served, and they... they come out of the military with this ability to work as a team, and especially in technology, it's very much team oriented.
Right.
So you know, you get a bunch of people right. of all different.
Not everyone knows that.
Yeah.
If you don't know that, maybe you're the problem.
Right. Exactly. But you get these people. They come out of the military, and so they're used to, we're here. We need to get here. Let's just do it. You know.
Right.
Cut through all the bullshit and just let's just get it done and let's, you know, whatever it takes. And you got to respect that.
So
they have a discipline that I think that is. I think that's why you see countries that have like a mandatory national service
right.
tend to do well. I mean, if you look at like Israel,
I've heard that pitched here, but I think there's also the fear that it's going to turn into that it can become a mechanism, a control mechanism.
I don't think it, necessarily the service has to be serving in the army, but you should, or the military. But I don't know. I kind of feel like you should give something back to the country mm-hmm. before you take from it.
Right, right.
So that you, I find now I never did serve, but I do find that people who did have a much greater appreciation for pretty much everything.
One of the things I swear I would never do on the show is talk down to the audience. But I'm not sure I'm ready to have this conversation. But you know the big problem. In one of the big problems in media, in dealing with military service and being a quality citizen as part of a country, you know, like both in ethics and in ability,
yep.
you know, is exemplified in the first Starship Troopers movie. And
yes.
I don't know if I where I'm willing to take that, but it's something to think about. Go watch it again and think about this problem.
Yeah, actually, I've thought about it with Starship Troopers, and that's definitely not a place you want to go. You don't want to have two classes of people.
Right.
You know?
Well, so, I mean, you know, it seems like people are... This is so... Anyway, I'm not gonna go there.
Save it for your next guest.
Yeah, it's not that I don't think I can. I just don't want to. I want people to look at that and choose themselves, and don't be too hasty to choose and think about, you know, because they're dealing with that problem.
Yes.
Right. I mean, it's kind of hard to be mad at, say, Sweden. You know, is Sweden one of the ones where they have mandatory military service and gun lockers that everybody has access to? I think it's Sweden.
It might be. Or Switzerland.
Switzerland. Switzerland's the one.
Yes.
Thank you. Sorry. Sorry, Sweden and Switzerland. they're completely different, right? One's Viking, one's in the middle of Europe.
Yeah. It's all in Europe.
It's all Europe.
Kind of, sort of.
Yeah. So, but Switzerland's the one that does that. And, you know, like, you know, it's kind of hard to be mad at them. And then be mad at Starship Troopers, right? Because they're kind of doing the same thing, the mandatory military service. Or Israel,
right?
Right? Israel has mandatory, you know, so to be really, you know, to be considered part of the society, you need to serve.
Yes.
So,
and it gives
you... And honestly, you know, I don't, you know, is Israel a military dictatorship? Is it this terrible fascist state? I don't think so. So, you know, that's why it's a sticky problem. There's a lot of pieces, and I don't think people are still dealing with the craziness in the politics today.
Yes.
So I don't think people are ready to talk about this. I think we can backpedal two steps and deal with the simpler problems first and then
so my Windows computer blue screens.
Yeah. You don't run Windows, do you?
No, I have a Mac. And I alternate between a Mac and Linux. I have a Linux VM on there.
Right.
But, my primary machine's a Mac.
Right.
No, I'm not a huge Windows fan.
Right. When did you stop? Were you always not a Windows fan, or...?
You know what? When I was in college, I learned the computers I was programming on were VAXs that were running Ultrix.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my first experience. And then I kind of, when I got out of school, I had, you know, Unix experience. So at Cheyenne, they started making a backup product for Unix for Solaris, and they're like, oh, you know Unix, so you can help us with Solaris. So I was always the guy that knew Unix or Linux.
Right.
So I got to keep the skills kind of sharp. And when Apple switched over to OS X, I wasn't one of the early adopters.
Did you secretly cheer when that happened?
Yes, I was very happy. But I wasn't an early adopter, but I definitely came along and I was like, all right, this is good.
Yeah.
I can just open up a bash shell, and I can get right at it, you know?
I didn't know you were into Apple.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, I was so excited when Apple went OS X. I was really like totally. I actually worked as an admin primarily as in an OS X role for a year and a half as
wow.
a pro. So like you know like it was and I was never an Apple fanboy or anything.
Right.
In fact, I kind of go yeah whatever.
It's
you know I worked for that company Shopify. I worked for them and they were like oh yeah we use Apple for everything. I'm like what? I'm like I don't know anything about that. I'm like don't worry about it. If you know Linux, you'll figure it out.
Yeah, that's it's really. It's if you know Linux, if you want to learn Linux, Apple's a great way to start, you know, to get into it. But if you're doing like most of the stuff I work on today is cloud-based, and most of the cloud stuff is Linux-based, mm-hmm. and you know, once you start getting into cloud and you start getting into microservices and containers and all that stuff, it's all Linux-based. But I can run all that native on my Mac and then migrate it up into the cloud.
Right.
So it's all
cool. Do you download it from Git and compile stuff there? Do you use the ports port?
The
BSD ports, you know, like, I don't know if you know about that.
There's
like a ports kind of thing that you can run on OS X.
I run most things as a VM if I have to. I'll use Vagrant, or now I've started using mostly Docker.
Okay.
So I do any kind of development work in Docker, because then I just create the container, do what I need to do, and it's gone.
Containerization's awesome.
Yeah.
So actually, I'm glad you brought that up, because containerization, I think a lot of the Web 2.5 stuff, if you're not sure about where this is going, you know, if you want to run a Web 2.1 or 2.5 app in your browser and you're not sure about how much data you trust them with, then containerization.
Yeah.
I thought about that today for the first time. I'm like, yeah, this is where user-based containerization, Web 2.5 is where user-based containerization comes in, because then you can have a thing that just peeks over the wall. Like, let's say that piece of software I was talking about, let's say you didn't trust it.
Right.
Fine, just containerize it.
Yeah, blow it up, see what happens.
Right, and then you're just, sure, it knows your shopping habits, but it doesn't know your bank password, it doesn't know,
right, exactly.
It doesn't know what you're looking at on YouTube, you know, it's just what you just use that container for shopping so that you can get the discounts and whatnot.
Yep.
And they get some data, but they don't get, you know, the keys to your family legacy.
Exactly.
You don't get everything.
Exactly.
Right? So it kind of brings up an interesting point about, like, what do you think Web 3.0 is? So we never got to talk about Web 3.0. So based on my other descriptions, right, Web 1.0 is standalone machines, 1.5 is shared metadata, you know, whether it's something like NAT or whether it's something like Apache load balancing or whatever. You know, Web 2.0 is in, you know, shared metadata by design, 2.5 is peeking over the wall, blocking it. So what do you think? I have my idea about Web 3.0. Do you want me to just tell you?
Yeah, the 3.0, I think they plug right into your head. Pull the data right out.
Oh God! I think I just pulled out I just pulled myself out of the matrix. Right? Can you still hear me? Okay. Right. They just put the Borg eyepiece on.
And yeah. Okay. We will assimilate you.
Yes. I never understood why Locutus had a name. He should have just had a number. Right. Anyway. So Web 3.0, I think, is really just your metadata is out there. It's an open source, open solution. This is like the worst nightmare, you know, for the Facebooks and the Twitters and all the people that exclusively resell your metadata.
Yes.
But there's a problem, and I think this is where Web 2.5 is really important, and it's important that people get used to this. I don't think you can have Web 3.0 without transparent society.
Okay.
Because your data is out there.
Right.
You can't get rid of it. It's out there, it's public, and it's almost like as a society, we need to take the next step. You're like, I don't want to get too like weepy here, but like the next step towards being a type 1 civilization and just going, okay, my data's just out there. I just have to count on people to forgive me and accept me for who I really am, drunk with the lampshade on my head.
I've already gone with the
sexy smart girlfriend and with the not so sexy, not so smart one. You know, and that time I got arrested because I was going over 1 mile an hour over the speed limit.
Right.
No one's going to judge me for that.
I
because that, you know, eventually the more data that's out there, the more likely you are to get found out with that kind of stuff.
I'm like that with a lot of my personal data now. I mean, when you think about it, after the Equifax hack, pretty much everybody's social security number and information was out there.
You're screwed.
So that's why a lot of the hackers are targeting schools now, like elementary schools and stuff, because the kids have clean social security numbers. They didn't have credit.
Well, we're going to have to get real about age verification at some point.
Yeah.
We're very much not, you know. I mean, I do it with my kids, too. I'm like, yes, just click yes. But you want to play the game, just click yes. You're 18.
I totally agree with you. I think at some point you can't hold somebody accountable for the stupid thing they did, like, when they were 16. You know, I'm 50 now. Don't judge me based on what I did when I was 18 years old.
I'm
not that person anymore.
Yeah.
Not that I did horrendous things, but I did things that every 18-year-old boy does, you know?
Right.
And none of them were illegal or anything like that. And
I did illegal stuff.
Well,
I'm not going to tell you what. I did some illegal stuff.
But, you know, I think there has to be like a statute of limitations. You need to be allowed to grow. And you need to be allowed to make mistakes.
Right.
And, you know. And
you can't really be human.
Right, exactly.
You can't be human if you don't make mistakes. I really think that's part of the human condition.
I agree. I think it's really tough when people go back in time and they're like, hey, you know, this famous person shouldn't host some award show because 10 years ago he said something that at the time was socially acceptable.
We heard they took James Gunn back.
What?
They took James Gunn back. Now he's back on...
Oh, really?
Yeah, on Guardians.
Okay.
Yeah, he's doing Guardians 3 again. So, yes, he definitely did a great job with 1 and 2.
Right.
You know, on the one hand, you know, off-color jokes, it's really horrible. On the other hand, I don't want to be a hypocrite. I'm saying that we need to forgive people for stuff. If he says he regrets what he did, and he didn't actually hurt anyone. You know, it was a thought crime, really.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I mean, that, clearly it was a thought crime. It wasn't like entire kindergarten classes. You know, decided to go to the local strip bar because they read his Twitter post.
Right.
You know, I mean, I'm not saying that was what it was about, but it's just a perfect example of how ridiculous it is. You know, it was a thought crime, and he said he was sorry. And Scott Adams has this thing where he says, you know, there's a 48-hour rule. You know, if you say you're sorry with 48 hours, I don't even know it's 48 hours. I think you just have to say you're sorry and mean it.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? You can look back in your past. I've said plenty of stupid things that I'm like, ooh, yeah.
I am super paranoid. I've said plenty of stupid things, but not anything incriminating.
Oh, yeah.
This is by far the most incriminating thing I did. Have you been waiting for your opportunity to get me? This is it, folks.
Right.
If you don't get me here, you're not going to get me.
But, like, I think, you know, people need to move on from it. It's if it was socially acceptable at the time and considered a norm, and it's not now, well, you know, society changed. Why didn't I change?
Right.
You know, I probably changed with society too, and I'm looking back at that going, ooh, wow, that sucked.
Well, even more than that, I will say, where there's this great Ben Franklin, you know, on matters of principle, stand firm like a rock. On matters of fashion, you know, go with the trends or something
yep,
like that.
Yep.
I'm paraphrasing. I don't really know what the quote is, but it's pretty close to what
yep.
he said. And you know, I think. You know, I think even on matters of principle, you could be wrong.
Absolutely.
I think it's acceptable to be wrong. And you can be like, yeah, that was dumb.
Yeah.
And I regret it. Because, you know, I think when you have those really dumb moments, like that really terrible thing, I mean, I have a few of those that shape who I am now and why I try to be careful with people and care about them.
Yes,
because
absolutely.
Because I still regret them years and years and years and years later because I hurt someone and I went, that was dumb. I can't believe I did that.
Yep, absolutely.
Or I said something terrible to someone or I did something terrible and I saw the consequences. And then I extrapolated to that book I was reading about the Holocaust. And I could see how someone could get the wrong idea here.
Right.
You know, and just go with the flow and be like, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I'm on that team, yeah. Because they're angry or upset or not thinking.
Right. Or they just might not be educated enough, especially when it comes to things like hate.
Because if
it usually comes from ignorance.
You know what? If you can't carry your own flag, you end up carrying someone else's.
Yes, absolutely.
That's the problem. And then you know what? The problem with people who are carrying someone else's flag, they never look at it.
Yep.
They never look at it and see what it really means.
Yep.
You know, you got to carry your own flag.
And you have to have some
you
level
have to have the
of,
room to.
Yes. You have to have some sort of level of, you know, knowledge and education. I don't mean like
right.
school education.
No,
I mean
I
like
understand.
You know, like
indoctrination.
Yeah,
no,
like
no, no.
just to not be afraid of people who are different from you. Embrace that, because
right.
that's what makes life interesting.
Yeah,
I mean, chocolate ice cream is great, but every once in a while you want strawberry.
Right. Right. Or not embrace it until you're ready. That's also important too.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Because this is like this huge thing where you have to know everything about everyone.
Bro,
like this
yeah.
kind of social movement, and that's crazy. And that's part of the reason that this craziness is happening, where it's turning into witch hunts, because people are carrying someone else's flag. This idea that you need to know everything about everyone, and you can't.
Right.
It's a silly idea.
It really
you
is.
Know. And I mean, we have to work through. I mean, it seems like weird. Like, why would he talk about this on the Technocrat Live? What the heck is he doing here? And because part of the reason is because this stuff's in the way of Web 3.0.
Yeah.
You know, I really think we need to get privacy needs to die. And I'm not saying totally. There'll always be some kind of privacy. But I think, for me, privacy is tied to property. So I think that property is a fundamental human right, and that privacy actually comes from that. And I'm not saying you have a right to any property at any time. There's a commons, too. There's
right.
definitely a commons. I'm not saying there isn't a commons. But there were a common property where everyone needs to benefit. You know, you can't, you know, I own the ocean, and I'm going to overfish it until everything's dead.
Right.
You know, that's crazy, you know. But at the same time, you have a right to some kind of property, because it gives you some control of yourself. And I think on your property, you have a right to privacy.
Yes.
Yeah. But when you go out in public, when you're in the commons, that's a freaking commons, man.
Yeah.
And we as a society need to accept that, or we're going to be trapped in Facebook forever.
Yes.
Sorry, Facebook. I hate to make them the bad guy. They're not the only bad guy. And actually, lots of good things have come from it. I mean, the socialization of the network there is amazing.
Yes.
But the problem is that sometimes Facebook turns it into a casino. And it's not just them. All social media does it. I mean, even just the likes on a YouTube video, it's a casino.
Ching. Yep. And, well, people forget, when if it's free, then you are the product.
Right. Right. And I'm okay with that.
I am too.
I just want a cut.
Right.
I want my cut. Where's my cut?
You're getting the service, but you have to go into it knowing that. Like, when you use Facebook and people are like, oh my God, they're selling my data. What did you think they were doing?
Right.
How'd you think they were making money? You know.
So one of the reasons I think that we got to the situation originally. So I had a kind of. So I never promised to not grow in the show. I knew that I was going to have these conversations, and you know, like, and we were going to just explore and go off the deep end, and really. So I think I've actually grown just in the 4 weeks I've been doing the show. On the fourth episode, I've grown a little bit, and I used to think it was this conspiracy theory where the big media companies were hiring up the open source people to stop them from building competing products, like this Elastic thing you were talking about with
right.
Amazon and Netflix and Expedia. Like, they didn't, if we hire these guys, because I worked for a company that tried this in the late 90s. I was a sysadmin hired gun, and they were trying to hire all the sysadmins so they could charge whatever price they wanted.
Okay.
So most of the time we're just sitting around. That was the intro. That my wife was so mad. She's like, how do you get to just sit around and get paid for it? I'm like, it's awesome. You know, but I didn't just sit around. I studied. And
right.
I
yeah.
learned. But, you know, I'm sure everyone didn't.
Right.
But you know, I like the code and stuff. Anyway, sorry. So, you know, I think originally I was thinking, like, maybe that's why there's no Web 2.5 or Web 3.0 alternative technologies coming out, because all these guys are being hired up, and you know, even if it's your free time to work on open source stuff at a big tech company, you're like, you know, you still gotta produce something at some point. They're going to say, what are you doing? Because they're going to want to see if you're growing.
Right.
Right. That's the pitch. Who knows if it's true, but that's the pitch.
Right.
Right. And I was afraid that maybe they were stomping on the stuff that was interesting that could actually create an undermining case, like with Elastic. I said, I'm so glad you brought this to the table. Thank you for bringing this up. This is definitely going on my list. It has to be 6 pages. It's going to be completely unreadable. I'm going to have to start over. But now I'm beginning to think that maybe it wasn't that at all, that they weren't trying to pollute the talent pool because also you have this, you know, like people can come into the talent pool from anywhere in the world.
Right.
I mean, there's no barriers to entry. So I don't think it's that. I think it's as a civilization, as a planet, as a species, we have to start dealing with, you know, transparency. And not only transparency, but compassion and compassionate transparency.
Compassion is what's missing today.
Right.
I truly believe that. That and the ability to put yourself, empathy.
Right.
Put yourself in somebody else's.
Well, everyone's got it, but something happened.
Right. They're not using it.
Right. They're not using it. They're staring at that flag they're carrying.
Right. Right.
They're not talking to the person in front of them.
Exactly.
They got to stop staring at the flag.
And I think we need to stop labeling people. You know, this person is liberal. This person's conservative. This person's a redneck. That person's a fascist,
this
whatever.
This person's a potted plant.
Right. Exactly.
Sorry.
But, you know.
Oh, God. The potted plants are coming for me.
But we need to stop labeling people and saying, you know, and just start looking at people as people. You know, you believe different things than I believe, but that's right.
Right.
We sit at a table, have a couple of beers. We
right.
could probably agree on more things than we disagree on.
Right. I mean, you know, like we both were there.
Yep.
The food.
Yep.
Most people drive cars, maybe not New York necessarily.
Well, right. Yeah.
Right. But like most people, you know, everybody uses money. They really don't want to.
Right.
You know, and just there's things. There's so many things that we have in common, and you know, people are really arguing over what system works and what system doesn't. And you know, it's I mean, you could even argue that that someone who's a successful market maker is a technocrat in economics.
Yeah.
You know, like he's the guy who understands where the real numbers are.
Right.
And a lot of people like to talk and like to repeat what other people say to them, but they don't really get it. They haven't sat down and done the numbers for themselves.
Yeah.
And I'm not mad at them. I just want them to stop being mad at everyone else.
And we need to learn as a people to compromise.
Right.
I mean, you know, you're married.
Oh my God!
You know.
I had to put moccasins on. We gotta like sing kumbaya.
Right. But like, I mean, a compromise is not like, you know, it's always going to be 50-50. Sometimes it's 90-10. Sometimes it's 100-0.
Right.
But it should average out to somewhere around
50-50. Well, I guess that's part of it, right? You have to be willing to acknowledge you're wrong. And that's that's why it was important to me. Sorry, I don't want to steal your time, but it was important to me to talk about this conspiracy theory idea that they were intentionally polluting the waters of the tech field, you know, because I was wrong. I think I'm wrong about that. I mean, it still could be true. I wouldn't be surprised to find out one of them was doing it.
Right, right,
right. It's like that kind of that military thing where there's a vacuum, you got to fill it.
Yep.
Or you're not doing everything you can. There's a fiduciary duty to the shareholders
yep.
to maximize profits. And if it's cheaper to hire up all the good help and pollute them with non-disclosure agreements and non-competes, then you know you got to do it.
Right, right,
right. So, but at the same time, that's not really the problem. Because you can always grow, you know, people are driven to fix it. I mean,
yeah.
I really see a lot of people out there that are really just, they're frustrated at the miscommunication and the walled gardens and the problems with people just fighting over ridiculous stuff, just yelling at each other, and they want to fix it. And
yep.
they see tech as the way to leverage, they see tech as possible to leverage a solution.
I agree.
So, how can we follow that? Is there anything that you wanted to talk about tonight? Anything in particular?
No, nothing in particular. We've been kind of all over the place, which is great.
We really have.
It's been a great conversation.
I don't even know what time it is. It's 10. Okay, we're doing all right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we can go a little longer. How about you? You said...
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm good.
I'm good.
You don't look glassy-eyed?
Nope.
Do I look glassy-eyed?
Nope.
Yes, I always look glassy-eyed. Hey, one more thing. I'm gonna put the pirate. If I'm gonna rock like that, I gotta put the pirate hat on. All right. So we talked about B-sides, right? We're talking about your pen tester friends. By the way, if you know anyone who wants to be on the show, I would love to have them on.
I will definitely hook you up.
And let me know if you want to be on the show. If you feel like I've slighted you, you totally got the wrong idea, let me know, because I probably want to have you on. It's going to be a while. We've got some people in the queue, but I mean, I'm into it. So come be on the show, and let's be smart at each other and flap our meat flaps. So let's see. We talked about IBM. We talked about. Well, you know what we didn't talk about? We didn't talk about SRE. So what do you think about, tell me about SRE. Can you explain what SRE is to the audience?
SRE
is... You did a great talk on this in our user group.
Oh, thank you. SRE is Site Reliability Engineering. Mm-hmm. It was a concept developed by Google. They felt that, you know, the whole DevOps and Agile development process didn't really get us to where we needed to be. It still was kind of siloed. You still had developers, you still had operations people, and you're always going to have that sort of conflict because they have different priorities. Developers are looking to develop their code and push it into production. Operations people are looking to always have the systems up and running. Mm-hmm. And the best way to do that is to have no change. So you have one group that wants to change
right.
every day, and you have another group that never wants to change.
So the goal is contrary to other goals, essentially.
It's
poor goal making.
Yes.
Okay.
So, and that's what SRE really goes about. What Google found was they had a bunch of developers that actually had a lot of operational experience or operational aptitude. So they said, well,
what? That sounds like technical bubble.
they had developers that actually understood how the systems worked underneath. They didn't just understand the code, they understood the underneath piece. So
okay.
they took those people and they said...
Oh, so they took the people out of the whole pool of employed people.
And they said...
They picked them out. Okay, got it.
You guys are the bridge. You're half developer, half operations. And what they found were these people started developing systems in code to control the operation because they didn't want to do all the mundane things, you know. They didn't want to create users and clear disk space and monitor backups. They automated all that crap.
Right.
And they lived in a world of freedom.
Right. Sorry. The best is when you do that and nobody knows you did it. You're just like, yeah, I'm working really hard. Yeah. This is you gave me this terrible, difficult task.
Exactly. But the best part of it is they have a philosophy of an error budget. So they know going into it that systems are going to fail. Mm. It's going to happen.
An error budget.
So, or failure budget.
Right.
So we're going to say your system...
I need a big failure budget.
But if I'm writing the code, I need a very big failure budget.
Maybe everybody does, right?
But so
how do you decide how big the failure budget should be?
Well, it's a whatever percentage you as a business come up with. So let's say you're allowed to have 20 minutes of downtime.
So you try something.
Right.
Okay.
So let's say your piece of the pie mm-hmm. is allowed to have 20 minutes of downtime every month. So
right.
your developers keep pushing new changes. When they get to that 20 minutes of downtime mm-hmm. because they've written bad code, they can't push any more changes. That's it. They've used up their budget until next month. So there's no arguing, oh, this has to go.
I have a budget like that. My wife makes sure I use up all my words when I'm here. I'm doing great, by the way. You're totally challenging me. So keep going. The error budget, yeah.
So you get the error budget, and then they also have a concept of blameless postmortems.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, you've worked on the operations side.
It's kind of like what we were talking about before.
Yeah.
With just society as a whole needs to get more blameless.
Exactly.
Or less blamey.
Yes.
Yes.
So your system fails, you have a postmortem because you want to figure out why did it fail. Well, when I first started my career, it was the system guys would go, it was the network. The network guys would go, it was security. Security would go, no, it was the system. And somebody had to be the fall guy. In the end,
right.
it was somebody's fault. And usually the guy that wasn't at the meeting, it was his fault.
Right, of course. Nice.
So with a blameless postmortem, you say, here's what broke. Here's what we can do to prevent it from breaking again.
So what happens when someone tries to blame? Do they like throw an eraser at them or something? Or
yeah, they get
no. Hit them with a newspaper.
They get thrown off the island.
Get thrown off the island.
Exactly.
At least a minute or two of falling.
So with the error budget taking away the political fight of do we push or not push, and the blameless postmortem, people are actually free to innovate.
You guys are doing this?
What?
You guys are doing this?
We're trying our best.
Right.
I don't know that anybody's doing it as well as...
Well, with your clients, obviously, right? You have your own meetings, and then you have your strategies for your clients as well.
Yep.
So, but you're seeing it working.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds really great to me. I mean, when you told us this in the group, I was like, this is it. This totally blows DevOps away.
It's a philosophical change, and it also requires managers who are comfortable in their own skin because you're kind of giving up a little bit of your control, mm-hmm. you know, which is good. I think the more you push further down the stack, the better off you are.
So here's a secret that not everyone knows, although I'm sure you do know it, which is that to serve is to lead.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. If you're really being the leader, you're solving the problems.
Yes.
It doesn't mean always necessarily getting up in the front and going, fire! You know, it isn't being Captain Kirk.
Right.
There was a great Black Mirror on that, by the way. I don't know if you watch Black Mirror, but...
I've watched a few of them.
Right, okay. So it's kind of like Twilight Zone, so everyone's kind of different. But, you don't get to be Captain Kirk and get up there and go, fire! You know,
right.
It's like, really what you're trying to do is you're trying to, like, you're Scotty and you're trying to glue things together.
Yes.
Yeah, or you're Uhura and you're trying to, you know, get people to talk to each other.
Right.
That's what a real leader's doing.
Yep.
The guy in the captain's chair is just there to make the final decision when there's no other way to do it.
Exactly.
Or to do all the stuff that no one else wants to do. Hopefully not too much of that, right? Right.
Yeah, we get the interns to do that.
Yeah. Hopefully you can delegate, right? If you have resources. If you're successful, you can delegate at some
point. Right, exactly.
Yeah. So, okay, well, that's a great explanation. So you guys are happy with the results? Is it still a work in progress?
It's a work in progress.
Is there anyone out there going, this is terrible, we can't use this anymore, it's a disaster, we shouldn't have done this?
Not that I know of. I mean, a lot of big companies...
I don't think so either.
Facebook is moving this direction. Google obviously embraced it. Mm-hmm. LinkedIn uses it. So I think
Google is not always evil, huh? All right. So they're evil but smart.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I'm undecided on Google.
Right.
So I think they have their moments.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, they clearly have mucked. I don't like what they've done with their algorithms at all. I think there's a huge opportunity for another tech company. Like I know DuckDuckGo sucks up the stuff that other search engines do. I think it's a huge opportunity for someone to just rewrite Google and not mess with it.
Right. Just let it go.
Just let it go. For the same reason that there's opportunities with the other social media companies.
Yep, I agree.
I used to get much better Linux. Not even talking politics or society or what I believe or what I think, right or wrong. Just talking tech. I don't get nearly as good Linux tips as I used to.
Right. Yep.
You know, I just like, you know, I can usually find the answer, but I have to search harder for it now.
Yep.
And so whatever they've done, they've managed to, you know, I think they're focusing more on accredited institutions. You know,
yes.
We're talking SEO right now, search engine optimization. You know, and they just I think they're doing that because there were just so many tricks and there was so much money at stake.
Yes.
When you trick Google. So maybe the key is to just have a bunch of smaller search engines so there's less of a payoff, you know, and then the trick only works with one but not another,
mm-hmm.
you know. But it's a risk of monoculture,
yes.
which is the risk of Microsoft back in the day.
Yep,
not
yep.
all of that was their fault. Some of it was just, they were just the biggest target.
Yep,
yeah,
yep.
Ever, you know, back orifice was written for Microsoft because
That's
they
true.
Were the biggest one.
Yep.
You
yep.
know, so, I'm not thrilled with them either. All right, well, that was a great explanation of SRE.
Thank you.
Let's see. There's something else I probably wanted to talk to you about. There was something else in here. Hold on. Please hold. Oh, cryptocurrencies. How could I miss that? So, any input on cryptocurrencies? What are your feelings on them? I haven't got to talk to anybody about cryptocurrencies. Can you believe it?
I'll be honest.
Shut up about it.
This gets sound weird. I don't really follow it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I thought for some reason you did. Okay.
No. I
talked with Rich about Bitcoin for a little while, because we were talking about Elliott Wave and market forecasting and that kind of stuff.
I completely missed out on the opportunity, and I'm just like,
over, man.
okay.
Not done. We're just getting started. But okay, yeah. I'm really so there's two things, right? You have the blockchain crowd, which is like, who cares about what any particular cryptocurrency is worth?
Right.
You know, blockchain is the future. This is the ultimate technology. And you know, distributed databases are it, right? And then you have the crowd that's actually interested in the money aspect of it, and you know, like the proof of Bitcoin's like the proof of concept thing.
Right.
So there hasn't been any blockchain projects or push in the organizations you've been working with or anything.
No.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm glad I got the chance to ask. any thoughts on AI? I'm curious if you had any input on that, or either not. I realize AI is kind of a misnomer, right? It's not really smart.
Right.
It's just piles of. It's the Netflix model. Does the Netflix model have a name? Because I'm really having trouble.
I don't know.
Right. Well, tell us what I'm talking about.
It's more of a machine learning type thing.
Right.
You know, it's
machine learning, right. So I guess the Netflix model, in a way, is kind of like a human interjected machine learning model.
Yes. Yep.
I'm a Darwinistic machine learning.
Yep.
But the machine includes people.
I don't think there's any machines.
It's a cyborg machine.
Any machines that are going to pass the Turing test anytime soon.
Right.
So.
Well, it'll happen.
It will at some point.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it'll be in my lifetime, but it will happen.
Yeah. Eventually we'll feed them enough stop signs and then they'll know.
Right.
Feed me buses. Feed me bridges. That's what we're doing. We're trying to optimize the algorithms for smart cars.
Yep.
people don't realize that, you know, when it says find all the children.
Yes.
You know, or find, you know, they don't do that because
I hate those things.
Yeah, yeah. They specifically don't do, they actually, that's a terrible dark thought. It might be getting close to the end of the night because I was just like, what if smart cars are running kids over because they don't want to deal with the liability consequences of putting kids in those photos, so they train the cars on how to avoid everything but children. Because they don't want to have to...
On that note, have a great night, everybody.
Homicidal cars seeking out small children leaving school. It just be a giant hole in their algorithm because they're not really smart because it's machine learning.
Yes.
Right? It's not like they're making a moral decision.
Right, exactly.
Hint, morality is part of intelligence.
Yes.
Anyway, but it's not like they're making a moral decision. They just have a big pile of code and, you know, it's just, they just test the heck out of it.
Yep.
It's really, machine learning is what just testing. You have a test suite. Basically, a machine learning based algorithm is only as good as your test suite.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. And so what I was talking about before with the Netflix model. So site reliability engineering is the Google model. And that's that idea where you're trying to create a currency based on failures.
Right.
And then use that currency, you distribute that currency in the same way and look at how it flows, and then you can figure out what the problems
are. I see what you're saying. So, yeah, Netflix uses a chaos theory. So
chaos, I love it.
They have a bunch of tools called the Simian Army. So they have Security Monkey, Chaos Monkey, all that stuff, and they literally go into their production infrastructure and will crash things to make sure that they can always recover from it. And it's a really interesting way of doing things. And they have a whole group of people that's like chaos engineers. That's their job, is to blow stuff up.
Oh my god, that's so awesome.
Which actually I'd probably be really good at just innately.
Right. Nice. Yeah, me too.
But like, I saw one of the Netflix engineers saying that, you know, every engineer at Netflix has the ability to push to production. And he's like, they've never had restrictions, and it's because their system is resilient. And if somebody makes a mistake,
right,
we can recover.
Right. If you make something idiot-proof, they'll just build a bit better idiot.
Exactly.
Right. HR will build a better idiot in this case, I guess, right?
Yep.
We found a better one. Okay.
They'll come hire me.
Go for it. Isn't that weird, though? Seriously,
yeah.
Like, at some point, you know, the town fool could be a job description.
Yeah.
Right? How crazy, how much crazy randomness can you introduce in it? People will become, being a random number generator will effectively become a job.
Yes, yep.
Whoa, this is getting bigger than me. Okay.
We're kind of going off the deep end.
Yeah, but I mean, I can totally see it, right?
Yeah,
I mean, especially
no, absolutely.
In an economy, I mean, there's people who are theorizing that universal basic income is needed because you have all this machine learning taking up, and also physical automation, and also planned automation, and the combination of the three are essentially just killing job markets.
Yes.
And the projections for future killing is much worse.
Yep.
So you're going to have these throngs of unemployed people, and I mean, you know, generating random numbers may become, qualitatively valuable in that economy where people have to work less and less and less. Just generating junk noise,
right?
That's
right.
Reliably junky. doing random human stuff,
right?
You know, being willing to just introduce your own chaos and your own thinking. This isn't supposed to be a self-portrait, but you know, although it would be a great job, right? You know,
yeah, yep, it's true.
Yeah. So I guess it's the chaos model of Netflix building into as creating the perfect test suite. So we know, I mean, intuitively you can tell the chaos model is always going to build the perfect test suite.
Yes.
Because you can't, you know, I mean, you can plan some of chaos, but also chaos has to have random outliers too.
Yes.
Right? So is SRE going to run into trouble because it can't build the perfect test suite? You can only build it through things that you've encountered.
I think that's where your error budget comes in.
Right, right. So like this kind of goes back to what I was saying about the cars, right? The Internet of Things. This is probably the last thing because we think we're getting we're getting too out there and spatial, right? Unless there's something else you want to add.
Nope.
So, you know, you have all these cars out there that could be hacked theoretically, right? I mean, once you've hacked a make and model,
right,
you own that whole make and model, and you could like perform like a terrorist attack against an entire country, right?
Sure.
You know, like, oh, what are the police use in that city? Let's shut that whole fleet down.
Right.
So,
let's start running over people.
Let's start running over people, right? The easiest hack would be to shut them down.
Right. Yep.
I mean, because there's already code in there to do that. You just have to exploit the telematics unit, and you got it.
Yep.
You know, because you can fuzz, you can just flood the network and the CAN bus. This is how they did it.
Yep.
This was, by the way, this was all that testing was funded by DARPA, by the way. So this is something the government's worried about.
Yep.
The private sector not handling.
Yes.
And what DARPA's really saying is, you guys are good at planning regular problems. Like, this is the kind of thing that happens to us all the time, which is the kind of thing that SRE would be good at.
Yes.
Right? But when it comes to random or extraneous events, you know, stuff outside the periphery, you know, the edge cases,
you're
not good at handling this, and that's what the Netflix model is good at handling. So maybe it has to be some kind of blend of the two. Introduce one once in a while and say, okay, we're going to have a bad day.
Yes.
Declare a bad day, like, okay, we're going to have... If the currency is downtime, then you have a jubilee, right? Because you have debt, right? Of course,
right.
Everybody owes everybody. And sure, the meetings are blameless, but the people aren't.
Right. Yep.
Right. You know, you can be just constantly blowing it. Have a debt jubilee and let the crazy guy who just blows everything just go to town.
Right.
Right. Of course, have reversibility on deck. Right.
Whoa. Yeah.
And try to isolate it. You know, don't. But yeah, I mean, what do you think of that?
I think that's definitely.
What should we call it? See? Yeah, this problem again. What the heck do you call this idea?
Carry.
Carry? Like the car?
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, there you go. That's perfect. And there you have it, folks. Carry is born. Joe, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. It was fantastic.
Do you really? You want to come back?
Yeah, absolutely.
And send more people our way. Both
I definitely
watch.
Will.
Thank you so much.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thanks, guys, for all you do. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Great show.